well as various Trump allies and officials, roles have been given to Tony Blair and to Benjamin Netanyahu. One's even been offered, it seems, to Vladimir Putin, but not on the Board of Peace, at least for now, will be Keir Starmer or any other representative of our government. They've turned down the invitation because of the potential involvement of Putin. I want to know whether you think Trump can be trusted to rebuild Gaza in the best interests of the people living there, or is the UK right to be steering well clear of this?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, it's understood the Home Secretary is planning to set out the biggest ever change to the structure of policing in England and Wales. The number of forces is expected to be radically reduced from the current 43. An announcement expected early next week. Baroness Natalie Bennett, Green Party peer and a former leader of the party, told LBC it's taking forces further away from local communities.
We want to see local councils, local authorities having a voice. And what we've got is a government that's just centralising power in fewer and fewer hands. It's concentrating power even more in Westminster. The councils are being made to be agents of the state of Westminster. They're not being able to make decisions locally. And this is another potentially enormously centralising move.
Volodymyr Zelensky has used his speech to world leaders in Davos to criticise Europe and NATO allies. The Ukrainian president warned that nothing has changed for Ukrainians since he addressed them in Switzerland a year ago. The US Vice President J.D. Vance has been visiting Minneapolis as nearby school officials claim ICE agents detained a five-year-old boy. The Department of Homeland Security say they were targeting his father. Tensions remain high in the city after an immigration officer shot dead US citizen Rene Good. J.D. Vance has claimed ICE officers were being heavy-handed because the state governor and the city mayor aren't cooperating with the administration.
We don't want to employ tactics that... We don't employ the kind of tactics that are only necessary when violence is committed against officers. That is these guys' directive, and that's what we're going to try to do. Whenever you have a law enforcement operation, even if 99.99% of the guys do everything perfectly, you're going to have people that make mistakes. That is the nature of law enforcement.
Two people are fighting for their lives in Belgium after six people were wounded after a suspected knife attack. The incident happened in Antwerp whilst a Kurdish protest was taking place. Authorities have detained two suspects. And there might be a way back to Westminster for potential Keir Starmer challenger Andy Burnham. Suspended Labour MP Andrew Gwynn has quit his Greater Manchester seat on health grounds, triggering a by-election. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed up 11 points at 10,150. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather. Clearer skies for a time in southern and central areas tonight. More rain moving into the southwest overnight and staying wet and windy further north, a low of 1 degree. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 2 minutes after 10, Thursday night. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Great to have you with us this evening. Coming up...
Let's start with the assumption that Andy Burnham is keen to fight the seat, because if he decides he doesn't want to, then all this other stuff becomes irrelevant.
Speculation in Westminster hits fever pitch today after a close ally of Andy Burnham announces he's standing down as an MP, fuelling rumours that the Greater Manchester mayor is plotting a return to London and a challenge to Keir Starmer. But is he really? And if he is, might he pull it off? Details on that later this hour. Plus...
I don't understand why this administration thinks stopping immigration is the single most important issue. Immigration has been a benefit to the United States.
Donald Trump's ICE agents arrest a five-year-old boy in Minnesota and transport him more than 1,000 miles to a detention facility in Texas in what is clearly the latest deeply disturbing incident as part of the president's immigration crackdown. We'll look at that in more detail a little later. And
we need to ensure that men are prosecuted. The last thing that we need to do is normalise their behaviour and simply have women in the next carriage like we're Victorian ladies in need of smelling salts.
A model who was assaulted by a man on a London train backs growing calls for the introduction of women-only train carriages. But is that something you'd like to see? And is it really the way to stop violence against women and girls? Take your calls on that in about an hour's time.
call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Could we start tonight with the unveiling, highly anticipated unveiling, of Donald Trump's big Board for Peace, as he's calling it, the organisation that he's established, according to the US president, to help bring peace and stability to Gaza, to rebuild that part of the world, and also, in the longer run, to stabilise the entirety of the Middle East. On the Board of Peace are a whole host of Trump allies and officials, his Secretary of State Marco Rubio, his Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, his son-in-law and advisor Jared Kushner, as well as other politicians like Javier Milei, the President of Argentina, Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, who are close allies and associates of Donald Trump. They will be responsible for overseeing the rebuilding of Gaza amid the devastation that was caused, of course, by the war over the last 3 years. Lots of people on it. No Palestinian representatives so far. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, will be involved, as will the leaders of Uzbekistan, Paraguay, Kosovo, Kazakhstan, and indeed Mongolia. But not the Palestinians directly yet. Another person who won't be involved in the Board of Peace is Sir Keir Starmer. He has rejected the invitation, at least for now, according to the government, amid concerns about somebody else who has been invited to take part. One certain Mr. Vladimir Putin address Moscow, Russia, who for some inexplicable reason, Donald Trump believes, apparently, should have a say in the rebuilding of Gaza and the wider situation in the Middle East. I'm really interested in your thoughts tonight on whether you think this organisation that Trump is setting up, completely separate to the United Nations, completely independent of any other international body that he could be using as a vehicle for this. Instead, he's setting up his own organisation. Your thoughts on whether that committee, this Board of Peace, to give it its official name, can be trusted to truly rebuild Gaza on the first level in the interests of the people who live there, but secondly, to genuinely achieve what, let's be honest, no other US president has achieved and bring a lasting, durable, fair, just peace to the Middle East. Do you trust Trump to get this right? From what you've heard and seen about who's going to be overseeing it, the people that he's appointed to do that, do you have faith that they will do what's in the interest of the people of Gaza, the Palestinian people, and of course, the people of Israel and the wider region as well? Or given that this is a man, Trump, who only a few weeks ago was talking about Gaza in the context of a potential land acquisition for the US, a man who has, you know, not shown a great deal of interest in the plight of the Palestinian people, to put it mildly, do you doubt whether Trump is coming at this with good intentions? Is this a vehicle? Is this a kind of decoy for something that might be much more underhand and much more dangerous, in fact? Namely, a US attempt to try and grab Gaza and do what Trump wanted to do in Greenland. Seize parts of territory and other parts of the world that don't belong to America. Do you trust Trump to get this right? And is this Board of Peace going to achieve what the US president says he wants it to achieve? How much confidence do you have in any of those things? Or does this absolutely reek of self-interest to you? 0345 6060 973, the number, as always, for your calls tonight. You can WhatsApp the same number. You can text me, if you like, on 84850, or say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Really interested in your thoughts on whether you think this is the solution to bring peace to the Middle East and justice to the people of Gaza and the people of Palestine. Let's talk to Sir Andrew Mitchell about it all. Conservative MP for Sutton Coldfield, former Deputy Foreign Secretary of this country as well. Sir Andrew, good to have you on the programme tonight. How confident are you that this Board of Peace will rebuild Gaza and deliver lasting peace in the Middle East?
Well, look, the quest for a lasting peace in the Middle East is something that has evaded the international community now for decades. And while everyone knows where we want to get to, which is a two-state solution, Israel and Palestine living side by side behind secure borders, we've not been able to achieve it. So I think that anything which looks as though it could break that logjam should be welcomed. And although I think the inclusion of someone like President Putin in the Board of Peace, who of course is sanctioned and unable to travel internationally for fear of arrest is a mistake. Nevertheless, the fact that the board has been set up by President Trump, if it can achieve anything in this extremely difficult situation, is something we should welcome.
Do you have confidence and trust and faith in President Trump's motives here, Andrew? Because only a few months ago that he was talking about wanting to turn Gaza effectively into a US territory and posting AI-generated images of him and Benjamin Netanyahu lazing on the beach in Gaza, talking about the kind of potential for, you know, almost as a real estate project. Do you think he's in this for the right reasons?
Well, President Trump will have seen the reaction to that particular idea. Hopefully, he will have incorporated and absorbed that reaction into his plans. Anything that helps to bring peace to this intractable problem should be welcomed. It should be given a chance to succeed. I think this, although it's a stretch, and I think everyone realizes that, nevertheless, we should hope that it can make an impact. I actually think it's a good thing that Tony Blair is part of it. And of course, it comes following the initiative during President Trump's first time in office of the Abraham Accords. Mm. The Abraham Accords have made some progress. Many people believe that the reason why Hamas carried out their massacre on October the 7th was because they saw elsewhere what was happening in the Middle East and the success of the Abraham Accords, which was leaving them behind as mm-hmm. different countries took advantage of the economic benefits which the Abraham Accords were supplying.
I wanted to ask you about Tony Blair, because to say that his inclusion has raised eyebrows would be to put it mildly, I think. Why do you welcome the fact that our former Prime Minister is sitting on this board, Andrew?
Well, I think the reasons why eyebrows are raised are very clear and very obvious. But Tony Blair was the Middle East envoy. He's enormously experienced and knows all the key people in the region. I think that having him there and bringing to bear his immense experience will be helpful. And I very much hope that he's given the space and goodwill to see what he can do.
And just on the Putin point, Sir Andrew, I mean, none of us are fans of Vladimir Putin, at least none of us in our right minds. Is there an argument that says, well, actually, if we want a peace that is durable and sustainable, then getting all different perspectives sort of around the table, sitting on that board, including ones that we might not like, however much we might kind of have to grit our teeth and bear it, might actually be a good thing for the future of the Middle East?
Well, I don't think President Putin's putative presence, because of course he hasn't yet agreed to take part, should be allowed to completely derail this. But you do get a sense that it's rather like inviting the arsonist into a place where there's an enormous amount of flammable material. Mm.
Do you think in that context then the UK government is right to at least hesitate and not commit to taking part itself on this board? Yvette Cooper saying today that the UK would pursue sort of other avenues and won't at least at this stage be signing up to the Board of Peace. Is that the right decision?
Well, I think that that we are in a sense by supplying or by having Tony Blair there making a UK contribution. But I don't quarrel with what the Labour government has said about standing by and not being part of it, so long as they recognise that it's something which we should at least passively give support for if we don't actively join in.
Can I just ask you about the sort of the broader context in which this takes place, which is, of course, the kind of ongoing concern in British government circles and amongst our Western allies about Donald Trump and whether he is a force for good when it comes to international diplomacy and the world stage, or actually a force for a sort of evil, a force for malicious kind of intent. Where are you on that, Andrew? Is this a man that we can rely on to actually deliver peace when only a couple of days ago he was threatening war on NATO allies?
Well, he's for Britain and for Europe, this is a new era, and President Trump is extremely challenging. We seem to have managed to avoid a full-on crisis over Greenland. And of course, President Trump is right that we need to ensure that NATO defends Greenland and that there's a proper structure and defense there to ward off the Chinese and the Russians. But I think the point that people should accept and we're sort of gradually moving towards it, is that Europe, the European countries in NATO, must deal with European issues. And it is to the NATO European countries in dealing with Ukraine that we must look. You know, in Kiev tonight, they are languishing because the Russians have destroyed their ability to produce energy and warmth. They're languishing at minus 15 degrees. This is an incredibly serious position, as President Zelensky made clear in Davos today. And Europe together, which has a much bigger economy than Russia and much greater resources, Europe together must stand up against what is happening in Ukraine, this appalling conflict which has been perpetrated by the imperialist ambitions of President Putin. We in Europe must band together and work out how we are going to defend ourselves. That is the point that President Trump makes frequently. And given what he is saying, we must shoulder this burden. And it will be, you know, a very different NATO and Europe if we get this right, which exists, you know, in the future.
Thank you very much. Sir Andrew Mitchell, Conservative MP for Sutton Coldfield and a former Deputy Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom. So it's a potential yes to Vladimir Putin. It's a definite yes from Benjamin Netanyahu. It's a yes to Tony Blair. It's a no from Britain and quite a few of our allies, Norway, Sweden, France, also declining invitations to take part in this Board of Peace. And I can't help thinking that the biggest omission of all, from the list that's been published at least, is that of the Palestinian people and their representatives, given that this is part of the Palestinian territories. So how much confidence do you have? How much faith do you have in this new Board of Peace, led by Donald Trump, packed full of his allies and to an extent his cronies, to get it right when it comes to rebuilding Gaza and bringing peace to the Middle East? Or do you think that the UK government is absolutely right, at least for now, to say thank you but no thank you? This is something that we will still steer well clear of. Let me know your thoughts. 0345 6060 973. It's time 10:16.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl. More to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a jet-to holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a jet-to holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Astronautical protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10:17. Tony Blair reckons in a statement that he's put out today that this Board of Peace Donald Trump is launching is the best hope in decades of bringing peace to Gaza. He's involved, Putin might be involved, all sorts of other sort of right-wing strongmen like Viktor Orban, the president of Belarus are involved, the Palestinians aren't, the UK isn't, France isn't. How much confidence do you have that this Board of Peace is going to achieve anything, but also that it's actually trying to achieve anything when it comes to peace, stability and prosperity for the people of Gaza, rather than just an extension of US domination, effectively, in that part of the world? 0345 6060 973. Lee's calling from Frinton to kick us off this evening. Evening, Lee.
Good evening, Ben. You all right?
I'm fine, Lee, thank you. I've got to say, I think Tony Blair, when he says this is the best chance of peace in decades, I'd like a bit of what he's smoking, quite frankly.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an unconventional approach, right? But it might bite. These are notes I've written down. What I think it, it may bypass the stalled peace process and force new negotiations.
What makes you think that Donald Trump's going to be able to achieve what Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush couldn't, right?
Well, that is a good question. That is a very hard question. I just think he has the determination, he has the will, he has the self-interest.
Well, that's a worry, isn't it? That was going to be my next question to you. Can we have any confidence at all that Trump is doing this from a position of genuine concern and desire to help the people of Gaza and the Palestinian people and the people in the Middle East more broadly, given the bloke only a couple of months ago was saying he wanted to turn Gaza into a sort of US-run holiday resort?
A US-run Las Vegas?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, first of all, it needs Palestinian buy-in and a credible political state. Otherwise, it risks being unsustainable.
But, and it doesn't seem to have that sort of buy-in at the moment. I can't see any Palestinian representatives on the board that's going to decide how to rebuild a large part of the Palestinian land, which is a pretty big problem, is it not?
It is a pretty big problem, but what you've got to look at it as, Ben, is that they are trying. Trump is trying. It's better than what the situation is at the moment.
Trying, though? What do you think he's trying to do here? What's his actual motivation and ambition for Gaza?
Well, I think he's trying to strike a business-style deal.
Mm.
Driven approach, right? And that prioritise speedy rebuilding. It put pressure on the Gulf states, I think, and private investors that might want to put funding into it.
But this isn't a property development. This is a homeland for 2 million people and who have left. This is not something. This is not a skyscraper. And the way that Donald Trump talks about it and approaches it, and even the way that, Lee, you're kind of referring to it as well, this should not be seen as a property deal, and I fear that's how Trump sees it.
Yeah, and I mean, on the negative side, I agree. I mean, you know, first of all, it's got to have clear Palestinian consent, or it will face rejection locally and nationally.
Mm-hmm.
The relocation of the Gazans, even temporarily, that could violate international law.
Yep.
It would violate international law. Pressure on neighbouring states like Egypt and Jordan to absorb the responsibility could strain alliances.
Mm-hmm.
And rebuilding without addressing borders and rights could just repeat the cycle of destruction again and again, as we've seen over the years.
So. Could well do. Lee, thank you for the call. Great to have you on the programme to kick off a conversation about whether the UK is right to steer clear of this Trump-established board of peace that he says is going to bring peace to the Middle East in a way that no other US president has ever been able to. Thank you, Lee. Tony's a brand new caller tonight in Ilford. Welcome to LBC, Tony. Hi.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. Good evening. How are you doing? You all right?
Yes, I'm well, Tony. Thank you. Great to have you with us for the first time. What did you want to tell us?
So maybe I don't have too much experience. I'm 35 years old. But during the last couple of years, I know for sure the conflict was going on long before October 7th when that tragedy happened. Yeah. And right now with this, whatever Trump is trying to create, this organization with like Board of Peace, whatever. Yeah. I think it's basically him giving Netanyahu the win, and basically the takeover has fully happened right now, because in the future that Palestinian land is going to be the way Trump and Netanyahu wish to be. It's not going to be the way Palestinian people want that land to be. And based on the destruction that happened, I don't see normal to not have one Palestinian in that board. You know, only like other leaders that have their own problems in their country. And besides this, if you look at all of them that got invited for this board, yeah, they are leaders of countries that can easily be manipulated to do as Trump wants, or if Putin.
What do you think Trump does want? Because I share your concern, Tony, for what it's worth, that Trump is not going to approach this from a position of genuine self, you know, selflessness and altruism and concern for the people of Gaza. So what do you think it is that he is trying to achieve here?
Well, basically what I believe, yeah, it's like him giving the Israeli leader like a gift, this takeover. And
Israel doesn't want to control, it says it doesn't want to occupy Gaza.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's looking like estate or something like this. He's not looking like there are some people over there, they are their land, they lived over there, they want to have a normal life. Because look at the people that he invited, Lukashenko from Belarus.
Mm-hmm. Vladimir Putin's invited. What about Tony Blair? Why is he involved in this, do we think?
First of all, I do believe UK did the right thing by keeping distance for now from this organization. And I do believe Tony Blair, even though he has his problems from past, because I remember in Iraq, if I'm not wrong, when it happened, Iraq or yeah. Afghanistan, I'm not sure exactly, yeah. My bad.
Well, both. This is a man who brought war to two parts of the Middle East, rightly or wrongly, who has now got an important role, in fact, a particularly important role. He's on the executive board of the Board of Peace in bringing peace to a region where he is reviled and despised by quite a lot of people. For the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war as well. Tony, thank you very much for the first time call. Great to have you with us. Another Tony's in Aylesford this evening. Other Tony. How are you, other Tony? You're right.
Lots of Tonys. Hello, Ben.
All the Tonys. How are you, Tony?
No! God, I wish they stopped nicking my name. No, can I just say, congratulations on your lovely recent news.
Thank you, Tony.
I saw it on Instagram. Yeah, no. And it made me a bit emotional. Oh. I'm gay. It made me very emotional,
I'll tell you that.
Oh, bless you. No, but I'm being gay, and it's made me a bit broody, but trying to get a man pregnant has been quite difficult to...
You can adopt. I've got gay friends that have adopted, or use surrogates. There's ways of doing it.
Yeah. Well, maybe in the future. I'm not ready right now.
Fair enough. Yeah, you take your time. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
This Board of Peace, then. Is the UK right to be steering well clear, given the concerns that have been raised about Putin's involvement and Tony Blair's involvement and all the other people who are currently on it? What do you think?
I do. I think it's an absolute joke. Like, you know, you got the fact that Trump has said about getting Putin involved, which is just a joke as it is. But the only good thing I was happy about was Sir Tony Blair, because I do think he was the best prime minister. I'm 38 in my lifetime. Without a shadow of a doubt, he was the best prime minister. But then again, he said a few things recently that makes me feel like, well, you know, he might be involved, but it's not enough. But I did say to your... producer, I think Britain, France and Germany should be doing more for the people, for the Palestinians. I think that we should be taking the orphans and the children, get them out of the country. And I would be happy for this country to take 100,000 of them in straight away, help them, because I don't see any hope with this joke of a situation.
100,000 Gazan children, Tony?
Well, I don't know if there's that many, but I think we should be taking some of them in, because it's going to take years and years for that country to be built. But that does sound like a big number, but I think we should be taking a lot in.
Why only Gaza? Should we take 100,000 children from Sudan and Syria and the Yemen? And where do you stop?
I get what you're saying, yes, but, you know, what's happened to Gaza over the last few years, the fact that that country has just been, literally 90% of it has just been...
Yeah, but look at the situation in Sudan. Tony, hey, I applaud your kind of your motivation in wanting to help people in a desperate situation. But there's a lot of children and a lot of countries in a desperate situation right now. And where do we draw the line?
Yeah, I do. But I loved, you know, did you see Emily Thornberry on Question Time earlier on? You probably didn't.
I didn't. I don't tend to watch
that American man, and I loved it. But no, I understand what you're saying. There's a lot going on in Sudan and Yemen. I think that's the name of the country.
Yeah.
There is a lot going on. But I think I don't see any hope with this thing that Trump's doing, because he's dangerous. He's a joke. And the fact that he's got Putin involved just says it all, doesn't it? And Keir Starmer's keeping well away at the moment. I do think he should get involved.
But why, if you think it's all a ruse by Trump to achieve something else other than just bringing peace to the Middle East, Why should the UK endorse that and take part in it?
Fair point. I don't think it's going to get any legs as it is, but I'm just saying that because this is just a joke, I think we should just be taking some people from Gaza, especially the orphans and the children. I think we can take some in. Mm. I think France can, and I think Germany can, and maybe a lot of the other European countries.
Well, we'll see what people think of it. Tony, lovely to have you in the programme. Tony in Aylesford saying the least that we can do, if we can't bring peace to the Middle East, is let some people who are fleeing the conflict there, and it's not completely peaceful now. There has been outbursts and outbreaks of violence even since the ceasefire was agreed. Let some of them come here, at least the children. What do you think? 0345 60 60 973 is the number to call. And the UK government saying to Donald Trump, well, thank you for the invitation, Mr. President, but we are not going to take part in your Board of Peace just yet. Why? Because we don't want to sit around a table with Vladimir Putin. I mean, I think that's the right approach, isn't it, by the Labour government? And I would go further than they can and say, I don't have any trust or faith whatsoever that what Donald Trump is trying to achieve here is in anybody other than his interest. Now, part of this is just ego. I think he genuinely wants to see himself as the man who brings peace to the Middle East. So there, previous caller Tony was right. There is self-interest there. But Trump sees global diplomacy. Trump sees the world as a potential property deal. Saw it with Greenland, we're seeing it with Gaza. He has got his eyes on that piece of land. He's spoken about it in public before. He's spoken about the belief, his belief, that it should be governed by the United States of America. He's talked in public and then rode back on, suggesting that the 2 million people who live there should all be forced to leave. This is not a man, is it, that we can trust to bring peace to that part of the world? At least not a peace that works for the people who live there. What evidence do we have that Donald Trump has a single jot of concern or regard for the people of Gaza? I don't see any whatsoever. Do you? And if you don't, if you're with me, then isn't the UK right to be steering well clear of this ego project, this farce? If he was serious about peace, he could have done it through the United Nations. He could have done it through all the other international bodies that already exist. But no, he has to set up his own one. Because the guy's a narcissist, and this is another act of narcissism that is all about Trump, not about the people of Gaza, isn't it? Should the UK get involved, or are we right to be steering well clear of this Board for Peace? And do you have more faith than me, maybe, or less, that this is a genuine attempt to rebuild Gaza to the benefit of the people who live there? Give me a call. 0345 60 60 973 is the number. You can text 84850 or say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Next.
He has so many hurdles to clear if he wants to, well, stand as the candidate in Gorton and Denton. That's Andrew Quinn's soon-to-be old seat.
Might there soon be a way back to Westminster for Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham, who is reported to be plotting a leadership challenge as to Keir Starmer? There might well be today after one suspended Labour MP quits his Greater Manchester seat. We'll get the update from LBC Deputy Political Editor after the news headlines at 10:31, which come from Daryl Jackson.
The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically under major reforms expected to be announced by the Home Secretary next week. It'll be the largest overhaul of policing in decades in an effort to tackle what government sources call an epidemic of everyday offences. Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukrainians are living like the film Groundhog Day, claiming nothing has changed since he last addressed Davos. He also revealed the first trilateral talks between Ukraine, Russia and the US will take place tomorrow. And suspended Labour MP Andrew Gwynne's confirmed he'll stand down from Parliament on health grounds. There are rumours potential leadership challenger Andy Burnham will fight for the vacant Greater Manchester seat. LBC weather, spells of rain pushing northwards tomorrow, brighter for southern and central areas, but staying wet in the northeast, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC.
Bye, Mum.
He didn't used to leave his room. Now we can't get him back in.
When this lot need help, there's always an expert waiting.
Family mental health support.
All the kids covered for the price of one. That's why I'm with Bupa.
Join before the 13th of March and get a free Whoop 5.0 band and 12-month membership. Search Bupa Health Insurance today. New Bupa by You customers 18 plus. Redeem after 3 months. One per policy. Only pay for the eldest child up to 20 years old. T's and C's apply. Pre-existing conditions not covered.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Text 84850.
It is 10:35. We'll talk more about Andy Burnham's potential return to Westminster and what it might mean for Keir Starmer and his government with Aggie Chambray in a couple of minutes' time. First, let's talk to George, who's a first-time caller, another one, in Minneapolis, United States, Minnesota, I should say, United States. Evening, George.
Yes, so good evening. One thing that I was listening to, I just started listening, about the boarding Board of Peace. I was looking at the charter for the Board of Peace, and it has no mention about Gaza at all. It just talks about the board as being a peace-building function. And what it does talk about in that charter is that President Trump is the chairman of the board, and states can only join if they are invited by President Trump. He can also terminate any member just by his approval. And he was also saying in that treaty that the member states can, that President Trump can have jurisdiction over the member states only with their approval. But it doesn't say anything about states that are not members of the board.
So what's your assessment, George, having, you know, your right to point out all of those things, which suggests to me that this is an ego trip for Donald Trump and a power play far more than it is a genuine attempt to rebuild Gaza.
It is a little more to do than just Gaza. I think this is just a parallel to the UN.
He's trying to rival the UN?
Correct, yes. Because in the UN, because of the Security Council, they have veto power, the other countries do, and really nothing much can get passed through the Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
But this Board of Peace, if Trump has basically jurisdiction and really power over the whole group,
yep,
he can actually power over the other parts of the country. I mean, if Russia does join and Ukraine does not, then does Russia and the U.S. have power over Ukraine? Can they give power to Russia of the entire Ukraine?
Why has Russia even been invited? Why has Vladimir Putin been invited to have any say whatsoever in the rebuilding of Gaza?
Well, that part I don't understand. I agree what you were saying about not sure why Putin was invited then. That I don't know either.
George, I just want to go off topic for a moment, if I could. And just, yes, given you are calling from Minneapolis, I've got to ask you about the ICE raids that are taking place in your city, including the arrest, it's been reported today, and we're going to talk about it later in the show, of a five-year-old boy wearing a Spider-Man rucksack. What's your sense of what's going on where you are, the city that you're in, and how people are feeling about it?
Well, there's a lot of dissolution. There's a lot of fear and anxiety among the people in Minneapolis, where Mrs. Good was shot last week. It's about a mile away from George Floyd Square. That's the place where George Floyd was murdered, mm-hmm, back in 2020. So it brings a lot of memory back to those times. It took about 3 years for the people of Minneapolis to gain a better relationship with the city, with the city police, to have confidence in the police. But now it is not just the city itself, it is actually the federal government that has come in. And a lot of people, like I said, they're very anxious and they fear because right now I believe there are about 4,300 federal ICE and CBP agents. And also President Trump was threatening of bringing in 1,500 of army personnel.
Yep. And now we've got children, young children, five-year-olds being arrested by ICE agents as well.
Or yeah, I do have a friend. True, yes. I do have a friend who lives in Minneapolis in a high school where his son attends. He's about 16 years old. He was followed by ICE agents going to school, and he was taken out of the school. The agents actually entered the school, and they basically detained him.
The child? How old? Sorry, George, 15 years old?
Yes, 15, in high school.
Gosh. And sorry, carry on, what happened next?
Well, his father was at home. He has a green card, and his son, he has U.S. citizenship. So when he was taken from the school, he was put in a detention center in Minneapolis, and he was sent to El Paso, Texas.
Wow. Which is the same as this five-year-old.
Correct, yes. So he was actually in line to be deported back to, I don't believe I know which state, I think it was El Salvador.
Right.
So his father, when his son didn't come home, he found out that his son was in Texas about to be deported.
It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific.
Well, it is an overreach of the federal government.
To put it mildly. George, we've got to move on. We're going to come back to that story in the next hour. But another tale here of ICE agents acting on the instruction of Donald Trump, arresting children, going to schools, says George, from what he's heard anecdotally, to arrest school children and try to deport them without fully informing their parents. This is what's going on in the United States of America. We're going to look at that more in the next hour. For now, and thank you, George, very much indeed for getting in touch for the very first time. The time, 10:41. Let's just talk for a few minutes about domestic UK politics. There's been a lot happening today after one Labour MP, Andrew Gwynn, who you might not have heard of, he's probably not a household name, but the fact that he has announced today that he is stepping down as an MP is very potentially significant indeed. Why? Let's find out. Aggie Shaunbrey is LBC's deputy political editor who joins me now. Aggie, why is the decision by Andrew Gwynn to resign from Parliament potentially so momentous?
Well, it is so significant because it is potentially a path for Andy Burnham to challenge Sir Keir Starmer as Labour leader and of course, at the moment, Prime Minister. So Andrew Gwynn, he was a Labour minister until February last year when he was found to have made these pretty unsavoury comments in a WhatsApp group called Trigger Me Timbers, saying things like he hoped a constituent would die. I think it is worth saying, Ben, that he has apologised then and again today. Mm. But basically, over the last few months, there's been talk over whether some sort of deal was being hatched between the two of them. Because for Andy Burnham to return and potentially challenge Keir Starmer, he needs a Westminster seat, something he doesn't currently have. He is, of course, Greater Manchester Mayor, but he would have to stop being Greater Manchester Mayor and become a Westminster MP. And today that got a little bit easier, but not by any means easy, because there are significant hurdles still. Mm. So, for example, for him to be able to stand for selection, or at least try and be selected, he would need to get permission from something called the National Executive Committee, to basically have special dispensation to stop being mayor. And from people I've spoken to today, Ben, they're basically saying, we don't think he'd get that because we would be worried about
Reform UK winning that mayoralty, and also it would cost a huge amount of money to fight that campaign. So they're basically saying at the moment that they're just not sure that it, they think it may well get blocked by the National Executive Committee.
So they're trying to force Andy Burnham effectively to stay as Mayor of Greater Manchester, and Keir Starmer has he's kind of got a majority, he's got control of that key committee, I think that's right, isn't it?
That's exactly it, yeah.
So does he not look weak, though? If Keir Starmer genuinely wants to project strength, does he not say, look, bring it on? You know, I'm confident I will see off any contender, any pretender. If Andy Burnham wants to come and challenge me, fine. The fact they seem to be so worried about this and trying to use these sort of behind-the-scenes processes to stop it happening, is there not a risk for Downing Street that actually it looks weak rather than strong on the part of the Prime Minister?
Yes, there is absolutely that risk. There's also a risk that he actually isn't strong enough to block it. And by people essentially saying to journalists like you and I that they would block, the NEC would block him returning to Westminster via that seat, that then other people in the Parliamentary Labour Party then say, well, no, we really want him back. And it causes this sort of civil war in the Labour Party. Mm. And we have seen previously that Keir Starmer and the Labour leadership around him does bow to pressure from the Parliamentary Labour Party. But there is also the risk that if he comes back, he does challenge the Prime Minister. And as one Labour source said to me earlier, as soon as Andy Burnham becomes the candidate for Gorton and Denton, then effectively Keir Starmer becomes a lame duck Prime Minister. Now, that is obviously just their opinion, but their point, I think, was that they think Andy Burnham would then launch a leadership bid, then other people in the Labour Party would launch leadership bids as well. And potentially it would be a matter of time before the Prime Minister gets challenged and then potentially goes. We don't know whether those would be successful or not. But it is a moment of jeopardy for the Prime Minister and for the Labour government, really.
And what is Andy Burnham, or at least what are his team saying about this, Aggie? Because this sort of speculation has been running wild for months now. And they've been sort of doing what they can to say, look, you know, we're focused on the job in Greater Manchester and so on. What are they saying about this potential vacancy and a potential return to Westminster?
Very little, actually. So Andy Burnham has told the Local Democracy Reporting Service that earlier he was in the dark about the reports because it was reported before it was actually confirmed. And he said he hadn't been in contact with Andrew Gwynn on the issue, also saying people shouldn't rush to conclusions. So I think in that sense, not really saying either way whether or not he was going for the seat.
Can we believe that he, or at least his team, had no idea? There'd been no conversations at all. He found out just when the rest of us did. Is that credible?
That's what he says. I mean, you know, as I say, there have been these rumours, this speculation for months and months and months now that some sort of deal between the two of them might be done. But I mean, Andrew Gwynn today, there was talk of maybe, you know, there was some sort of deal being done and Andrew Gwynn would be promised something. But Andrew Gwynn today, you know, has talked about the significant ill health he's suffered over the last 21 years and actually shared a note from his GP to basically say that he wasn't able to work any longer as an MP. So it does seem entirely plausible that Andrew Gwynn is genuinely just going because of that significant ill health. Of course, it is a seat in Greater Manchester, and it has always been thought by Andy Burnham allies, really, that if Andy Burnham went for a seat in that area, or indeed sort of, some people say just in the north of England, then he would be likely to win it despite the polls. And, you know, the polls are pretty, pretty bad. And Reform UK saying tonight that they will throw everything at this seat.
Aggie, thank you very much. That's Aggie Shombury, LBC's deputy political editor. In a moment, more of your calls on whether Britain is right to be avoiding, for now at least, Donald Trump's board for peace. And we'll see what's leading tomorrow's newspaper front pages. Ben Kentish here, this is LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
President Trump yesterday doing what he does best, making news at home.
President Trump standing before the world and putting it on notice. He's not backing off at all in terms of his ambition to take control of Greenland.
And away.
Well, let's get back to the breaking news now that Donald Trump says a framework deal has been reached over Greenland.
Look,
what he's achieved. He's possibly on the verge of doing a deal that will give him maybe a Cyprus-style deal for Greenland. In a world now where you have dictators like Putin, President Xi, Kim Jong-un and all the others, just doing what the United Kingdom does, which is continue referring to international law, isn't going to cut it.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Ha, love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
I couldn't face the crowds. Now, I'm doing more of what I love.
When I found a lump, I thought the worst. But before I knew it, I got my results.
Mental health support.
Quick cancer care.
That's why I'm with Bupa.
Join before the 13th of March and get a free Whoop 5.0 band and 12-month membership. Search Bupa Health Insurance today. New Bupa by you customers 18 plus. Redeem after 3 months. One per policy. T's and C's apply. Pre-existing conditions not covered.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026.
A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:51 the time. David, I'll come to you on just a moment. You too, Abraham. Let's have a quick look first, though, at what's on tomorrow's newspaper front pages. We'll start tonight. Where shall we start? Let's start with The Guardian for a change. Leading, as we are this show, on foreign affairs. Stand up for yourselves, Zelensky tells Europe in a fiery speech at Davos. Volodymyr Zelensky took aim, rightly, I think, at Europe in a fiery speech at Davos last night, accusing leaders of being in Greenland mode as they waited for leadership from Donald Trump on Ukraine. He's right, isn't he? He had a real pop. Europe needs to know how to defend itself, said Zelensky, and he's absolutely spot on as far as I'm concerned. Also on The Guardian, the story that the allies of Keir Starmer have begun a Stop Burnham campaign to try to prevent the Greater Manchester mayor from returning to Parliament. It's the same on the front of the Times newspaper. Starmer's allies to bar the return of Andy Burnham, reports the Times. The Telegraph focuses on the latest round of elections set to be delayed. Their headline, 4.5 million people to be denied the vote as more polls are axed. This following two major Tory control councils being the latest to be given permission to delay local elections this May. The Daily Mail returns to the Andy Burnham speculation. Does Andy Burnham have the bottle? Is the pertinent question that they asked. Labour descending into civil war last night as Andy Burnham was offered a route map towards replacing Keir Starmer, writes the Mail. And last but not least, the Daily Express. Britain needs better care for cancer patients. That, according to charities, campaigners and others, as a as they await the long-awaited National Cancer Plan, is the front page of tomorrow's Daily Express. Right, 10.50 through the time, let's talk to David in Banbury more about the Board for Peace that Donald Trump has unveiled today, and whether you think it's going to achieve anything, David. Evening.
Ben, I don't think it's going to achieve anything. I think there'll be no peace in the Middle East because Netanyahu and Israel and Trump are shortly going to attack Iran. And I think the only peace it'll bring to the Middle East will be the peace of the graveyard for the people in the Gaza concentration camp. I think...
The peace of the what, David? Sorry?
At the Gaza concentration camp. Several Israelis have said...
It's not a concentration camp.
It is.
Not a concentration camp in the way that term is usually meant.
They've been starved and they aren't allowed out.
Well, they're not now, David, are they? Aid is being let in. There is a peace deal in place.
They're still killing people in Gaza, kill 400.
It's not a concentration camp in the way that phrase is usually used to refer to the extermination of 6 million people.
Well, of course, another thing is the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is providing aid for thousands of starving Palestinians, they shot dead thousands of starving Palestinians, and they were run by the Infidel Motorcycle Club, whose one of their vowed aims is to kill Muslims.
All right, David, I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't know the evidence for which you're basing it. So can we come back to the topic, Anne, which is whether this Board of Peace can be trusted to do anything in the interest of the people of Gaza?
I think it all hinges on Trump. Trump can bring peace, but nobody else can.
How can he do that? And given that all of his predecessors tried, some of them, like Bill Clinton, tried very hard indeed, and all of them fell short.
Well, America is the main supplier of weapons to Israel.
Yes.
And I think a lot of Israelis are decent, despite Netanyahu. And if Trump could cushion the blow, but they have to supply food and medicine to the people of Gaza, and Trump... Try and be even-handed for a change.
All right, but how do you rebuild Gaza?
I think it can be rebuilt. The Arab nations are very wealthy. Saudi Arabia's got billions. And I think just supply the earth moving. The Palestinians have been living in a vast wasteland for years. I'm sure they could wait a bit if they could actually see.
It's not a vast wasteland, David.
Well, it's like somebody's dropped several hydrogen bombs on it.
Since the war, but you said they've been living in a wasteland for years.
Oh, no, they haven't been living in a wasteland for years before the...
Right, you meant since the war.
Yes, since the war, yes.
Understood. David, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. Let's talk to Abraham in Gateshead. How are you doing, Abraham?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, then. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you very much indeed. Far away.
Yeah, I really enjoy your show. I love your balanced opinion on all these topics.
Thank you, Abraham.
Yeah, to the last caller, I don't really agree with his assessment. There's a concentration camp. I'm saying maybe, and it's not really, because if you look at before the war, I think Gaza is a very nice place.
Abraham, I'm really sorry, I'm going to cut you off there. Your line's a little bit fuzzy. We're going to see if we can get it a little bit clearer so I can actually hear the gist of what you've got to say, which I really want to. Let me come to some of your texts in the meantime. This comes from Sean, which I think asked a very pertinent question. Hi, Ben, why isn't there a Palestinian on the Board for Peace? Surely that's quite important. It feels more like a board of sales and occupation. That is the view of Sean. And this comes in from Tristan. If you think the world will somehow be safer without the UN or with Trump and Putin in charge of things, I've got a bridge to sell you and probably a much more awful future. What do you think? What do you think? Can we trust Donald Trump to get this right and act in the interests of the Palestinian people and the people of the Middle East as a whole? 03456060973. Bob's another brand new caller tonight in Hastings. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, I was listening to the people saying about Tony Blair there, and I'm saying that Tony Blair's the wrong man for the job. he's a good friend of Trump, and it was Trump that gave him the job, primarily because he wants to make Gaza into, like, a posh holiday resort. And he's not going to give the land back to the Lebanese, and he's going to take part of Syria as well and give that to Netanyahu to add on to Israel.
What, you think this board will basically culminate in Israel being awarded the right to govern Gaza?
Yes.
I don't see it, Bob, and the reason I don't see it is there's quite a lot of the Arab states represented on this board. Well, firstly, I don't think Israel wants to govern Gaza. I think they know it's an absolute hornet's nest that would cause them more trouble.
Yeah.
But secondly, there's a lot of Arab states on that board that would intervene and stop that happening pretty quickly, I think. Wouldn't they?
Well, I could expand on it, but I can't really on the thing. I actually spent a long time in that region, and I'm telling you that Trump wants to use Gaza for, like, a real estate business.
Well, he's joked about it. Well, was it a joke? He talked about it very publicly a few months ago, didn't he? Bob, I've got to leave it there, but great to have you with us for the very first time, and I hope we'll speak again very soon indeed. Thank you, Bob, for wrapping up our conversation for now, at least, on Donald Trump's Board of Peace and whether there's any prospect at all of it delivering that to the beleaguered people of the Middle East. We move on after the news at 11 o'clock. A model who was assaulted on a London train today backs calls for women-only carriages. But are they necessary and are they the solution?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, it's understood the Home Secretary is planning to dramatically reduce the number of police forces in England and Wales. There are currently 43. Ministers think it'll free up cash by reducing back office functions, but it will be well after the next election before we see any benefits. Dal Babu, former Met Police Superintendent, told LBC News this is long overdue.
Some of the smaller forces who have a Chief Constable, Deputy Chief Constable, Assistant Chief Constable, there's far too many senior leaders, and what we really need is more operational officers. So the idea of reducing it from 43 to 12, I think, is one of the suggestions. I think is a good idea. And on top of that, there's the economic factors. We have 43 forces buying 43 different types of uniform. We have 43 forces who've got contracts for vehicles.
Trilateral talks on ending the war in Ukraine will take place from tomorrow. Vladimir Zelensky, who spent an hour with Donald Trump today, has confirmed Ukrainian, Russian and American officials will meet in the UAE. He's confirmed a peace plan is nearly ready. Britain's avoiding signing up to Donald Trump's so-called Board of Peace due to concerns over President Putin's possible involvement. The Russian president said to be still considering an offer to join. The government says the UK will look at how else it can play a supportive role in the Gaza peace process. The first asylum seekers have been moved into a former military barracks in East Sussex as part of efforts to end the use of hotels. 27 men have been moved into Crowborough training camp with plans to accommodate up to 500. A by-election which could pave the way for Andy Burnham to return to Westminster will be held in Greater Manchester. Independent Andrew Gwynn is stepping down on medical grounds. He was sacked as a health minister last year for offensive WhatsApp messages. The Prime Minister wouldn't be drawn on whether he supports a potential leadership rival standing as an MP again.
It's a very early stage. The National Executive Committee of the Labour Party will set out a process in the usual way, as it always does for by-elections. Andy Burnham is doing an excellent job as Mayor of Manchester. We work very closely together.
And 29 local council elections will be postponed this May as part of plans to reorganise English local authorities. Labour's been accused of running scared from voters. Reform UK has begun a legal challenge against the government. LBC weather clearer in southern and central areas tonight, staying wet and windy further north, a low of 1 degree. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
...11:02 is the time, Thursday night. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Very, very good evening if you're just tuning in. We're going to talk for the next hour or so about the experience of a model who goes by the name of Amber Dowling Doyle, who unfortunately has experienced what far too many women and girls in this country experience when she was assaulted. Assaulted in her case as so often, by a man on public transport. Amber's 24 years old. She was travelling on the Elizabeth line from Liverpool Street towards Essex when a man approached her, tried to speak to her while she had her headphones in. She ignored him. He then grabbed her arm and stood in front of her to try to block her moving, then placed a hand on her leg and sexually assaulted her. Other passengers, thankfully, saw the assault take place and intervened, and the man was arrested. But because of her experience, Amber Dowling-Doyle has backed calls today, mounting calls, growing calls. Given the epidemic of violence against women and girls, and given how much of it takes place in public, often on public transport, for women-only carriages to be introduced in London and indeed possibly across the country, on trains, on tubes, on metro services, on trams maybe, across this land. And I'm interested in your thoughts, I'm fascinated in your thoughts actually, on whether that is something that you would like to see introduced. Whether you think it's sad but necessary, given how often these sorts of things happen. And you speak to any young woman, or any woman, and from my experience at least, most of them, if not all of them, will have some experience of a man behaving in that type of way. Staring, touching, trying to start a conversation that very clearly the woman didn't want to engage in. There's a spectrum, of course, of violence and harassment and intimidation. But from my experience at least, the most women I know have experienced it in some form on public transport. So I wonder if, very sadly, it is time that this is an idea whose time has come. That as much as it pains me to say it, given how common this seems to be, Amber and others who are now campaigning in favour of this are right. That until we can find a way to stop men abusing and attacking and assaulting and harassing and intimidating women, which has got to be the main focus, until we can do that, then maybe giving women some protection in the form of women-only carriages is the way to go. I don't really see a downside to it. I don't like the principle being it kind of puts the onus on the women to go somewhere else rather than the men to stop forcing them to. But, you know, we've got to, this is a crisis now. This is happening day in, day out on buses and trains across the country. So is this an idea that really should be tried right now? Is that something you'd support? Women-only carriages on trains and tubes and trams in this country. Good idea or not? And is it really the way to stop violence against women and girls? Call me this evening, 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. You can WhatsApp that very same number or get in touch on the old text messages on 84850. While you get your calls coming in, let's talk to Anna McGovern about it all. Anna's a political commentator and a social action campaigner. Anna, very good evening to you. Good to have you on the programme, Anna. Thanks for coming on. Is this a good idea?
I think in practice it is a very good idea. I think practically speaking, I would wonder how this could be applied, but I know this is something that I would love to see. Just speaking from my own personal experience, I was travelling out of London on a train, and I found that there was a man who was taking pictures of me without me knowing, from a bit of a distance. And then when I managed to actually see what he was doing through the window of the train, that made me extremely uncomfortable. And I did actually confront him on the spot and say, delete the pictures. And I was stood there for, I'm not exaggerating, but almost 10 minutes as he was deleting them one by one, because he was taking them throughout the journey, very zoomed up. And ever since that experience, it's made me quite uncomfortable on the train, way more aware of my surroundings after being put in that situation. And you speak to women who use public transport, many of them have very similar stories where they feel unsafe. So I think this would be a great idea if it was something to be implemented, you know, something that could be practically implemented. Well, I can imagine with the tubes in London when it's rush hour and it's so packed, that might be quite difficult. But if there was a way to do this practically, I think that a lot
we'll
of women
will come on to that, because I don't think it's actually as difficult as some people make out. But would you use it, Anna? Do you think you'd use it regularly if you're getting on the tube or the train and you know that one carriage is a women only carriage? Do you think more often than not, if you're travelling by yourself or with other women, you would get on that carriage?
Yes, 100%. I would feel a lot safer if there was like a women-only carriage. I think many women as well, they would probably feel the same way.
Let's talk about the practicalities then. I don't see why, if there was a rule that the front carriage of every train and every tube or every metro service in this country was women only, or the back carriage, or whatever, it'd probably have to be one end just for convenience sake. And there's signs all over that carriage, all over the door saying women only, men do not enter. I don't see why that's not practical. I don't see why that couldn't be implemented quite quickly.
I would love to think so, but then again, if you imagine when it's like rush hour on the tube and you're so packed in there, I've done that before, you can barely move, you're just all packed in together. And then I don't know how that would be practical with a women carriage if everyone's trying to pile into the tube.
Well, because so many women would want to get on the women only carriage, it would quickly fill up.
On the tube at all, especially during those rush hour periods. So I can imagine there would be practical issues like that. But I think I would love to see this happen if there is a way that it could be implemented effectively. I don't think just because there's rush hour that should be a reason where it's not implemented. And then also as well, I think increased staffing on the trains and the tubes as well, that would really help. I know my situation I talked about, there was a member of staff on the train. I was quite, after that had happened, I'd spoken to him. I was very distressed and he helped me with reporting it to the police and telling me what to do. So I really appreciated that. So I think having, you know, more staff on the trains and the tubes might actually hope, well, I would like to think it would hopefully deter that kind of behaviour from happening, at least a bit.
I get it. And as I say, in the short term, I totally see the benefit of it, like you, Anna. And I think a lot of women in my life would also find it very useful and feel a lot safer if there was that option. I can't help feeling at the same time that it's just another way, though, in which we are kind of putting the burden onto women to modify their behaviour, to think about, you know, what they're wearing and the route they're taking home and have they notified somebody and all the ways that, you know, women have to kind of protect themselves from the threat that's posed to them by men. Now we're saying, oh, well, you know, you have to think about what tube carriage you get on. Shouldn't we start talking more about the men who are the problem rather than asking women to do all sorts of things to kind of protect themselves? Because that's not the issue here. The issue is the blokes.
Well, I think unfortunately, I would love to think that, you know, men shouldn't be acting in this way and they're making women feel uncomfortable or that their safety is jeopardised in any way. But I think unfortunately, we live in a society that this is quite prolific, this is happening, and women are feeling increasingly unsafe on public transport. So I would love to say, yes, men, modify your behaviour, don't act in this way. But unfortunately, there are people out there that do this. And I think even having that in place where women can go to and feel safer, I think that's only a good thing.
Sounds good to me. Anna, great to have you with us. Thank you very, very much indeed. That's Anna McGovern, political commentator and social action campaigner. Even if it doesn't help, even if it doesn't solve the issue, which clearly it wouldn't, what's the downside to it? Why not give it a go? What's the problem? What's the issue? What's the objection to having women in carriages? I don't see one. Do you? 0345 6060 973 for your thoughts. Is it a good idea? Is it really the way to stop violence against women and girls, or part of the way to stop it? Lots of your calls coming in already. Let's talk to Elaine in Ilford first off about it. Ilford. Elaine, hi.
Hello to you.
Hi, Elaine. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Absolutely, this must be addressed. I mean, I'll be 70 next March, and I have experienced it when I was 15, 16, 17. I was leaving the tube. I was just getting off the tube when I was about 15 or 16, and a chap put his hand right up my bottom. Oh. And before I could remonstrate with him, he got off and he laughed at me as the doors closed.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
No, please don't be sorry.
Well, I am sorry, but it's such a common experience, isn't it, for women in this country?
I know, it's not new. You know, this is not new.
Mm.
So, you know, it would be great if you could travel safely. you know,
yes,
really.
It would. It would be great if men didn't behave in this way in the first place and we didn't have to have conversations
about
things like...
Yeah, but not all men... it's not all men.
Yeah, of course it's not. It's a small minority. But a small minority of men, as you know, Elaine, all too well, can cause an awful lot of fear and distress.
Yeah, but, I mean, I was strong enough to cope with it, if you wish. But there aren't, you know, and it's not fair. I mean, there's lots of young girls out there now that do not have... What can I say? No, they're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we do need being... They do need protecting.
Protecting in the form of having separate carriages where there are no men.
Well, you know, that's like blaming all men.
Is it, though, or is it just saying, you know, that if you go to gyms that I've been to in the past, there were all women spin classes, for example, you know, there are spaces that are women only. I don't have a problem with part of every train in this country being a women's only space.
I don't know, maybe I'm old fashioned.
You're not sure. What
no,
makes you
I
hesitate?
Sure, we need protection.
But you're not sure that's the way to do it.
Absolutely, yes, put the guards on, because they used to be,
okay.
I think they were called Angels. It was an American type thing. And they were on the underground for protection.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember quite when that happened.
So there was more of a deterrent to people who were...
Yes, absolutely. And they're out there, they're thick, they don't wear badges, all right? So you don't know.
Mm.
So yes. And men and women should be protected, either of.
Agreed. But what makes you sort of hesitate about this idea of having women in any carriages? What puts you off that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure.
All right. That's fair enough.
Well, I think, actually, we look like a target because we're all herded together.
Ah, yeah, but if one man then gets on that carriage, you can be pretty sure either he's an idiot.
You're being tethered.
Or he's a threat, and then he can be dealt with.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
So any man who just gets on a carriage full of women that clearly says women any carriage, if he can read English, you can assume is a wrong one, who is not there for a good reason. I hear you, more guards, more police, absolutely, Elaine. Nobody's going to dispute that. But I just wonder if, you know, given how unlikely that seems to be in the current climate of police resource cuts and all the rest of it, whether women any carriage is a step in the right direction, not the solution. But would it be progress? You're not sure. I think a lot of people will be hesitant and sort of maybe instinctively not convinced. But why? Let's give it a go, no? Lovely to have you with us, Elaine. Thank you very much indeed for calling in. Tons of calls coming on this. If you want to join the conversation, you know the number. In case you don't, it's 03456060973. More to come on that just a moment. The time now is 11:15.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
Hello, this is Mummy Phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together, undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026.
A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 606097.
11:17. Hey, says Lindsay on WhatsApp. Why not have a men-only carriage? Why should we women have to be restricted? If men are the problem, put them together. That's Lindsay in Arbroath. I like the logic, Lindsay, but surely the answer to that is, if there was a men-only carriage, then the sort of men that are intent on abusing women wouldn't get on it. The sort of blokes that would sit in a men-only carriage are probably not the ones that are the problem. That's why I don't think that works. That's why I think, sadly, women-only carriages are the way forward, at least part of the way forward, when it comes to stopping this epidemic of violence and intimidation and harassment against women and girls on transport. Let's see what John in Woodford thinks of it. John, it's a good idea, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, how are you going to do this? I mean, come on, be realistic. It's just not going to happen. And there's only one thing that must happen. Women have to take responsibility into their own hands. Now, I see a lot of women out. No, listen.
I'm listening.
Listen, Ben.
I'm listening. I'm shaking my head, but I'm listening. You go on.
Well, you shake your head, but
I will.
Do it quietly.
Well, it is quiet. I'm shaking my head, John. This is making my head's not out of me. Go on, carry on.
I'm saying that women, I see a lot of women out running, keeping fit.
Yep.
Maybe they want to lose weight, maybe they don't. It doesn't matter. They are doing that. I go to a swimming pool and there's women on those machines, those things where they're running on a machine with their arms coming backwards and forwards. What a waste of energy when they could be turning that energy into self-defense, into being able to. Now, that woman on the train, what she could have done when she realized that there was something evil about this person, she should have stood up and been able to stand back from him, giving herself space.
Right.
And when he attacks her, or when he leads her, she then hits him in a certain way.
So the obligation is on the women, not the men, John. If the women don't want to be assaulted, they need to do something about it. Right, so it's not, the issue isn't the men that are doing the abusing and the assaulting and harassing.
Okay, what are you going to do about it, Ben? You're going to go around and talk to men?
No, I think all women carriages would be a good place to start.
No, it wouldn't, because you're not going to get that. It's not going to be practical.
Why not?
By the way, what are you going to do when the women go? Okay. What are you going to do when the women get off the train and walk down the road? What are you going to do then?
You can't solve it. Nobody's saying this is the complete solution, John.
I'm giving you a solution that could
work for most women.
Yeah, but your
solution puts all the burden and all the responsibility on the victims of the crime rather than the perpetrators.
Well, they're the ones that are getting hurt, and they should therefore stand up for themselves.
All right.
You imagine if a woman stands up for herself, knocks a man down and hurts him, and she could do that. She also gives herself time to run away.
You're a black belt, John. Are you in jiu-jitsu or something?
No, my son teaches self-defense, and that's exactly what he's doing.
And what self-defense training have you done?
I've done all I did karate for a while, but...
You good?
Hang on.
Could you fend off an attacker?
No, hold on.
If you were attacked in the street then, if someone comes up and they mug you and they leave you for dead, my response is, well, you should have done more karate, John.
No, hang on.
That's what you're telling me.
Stupid.
No, I'm not, sir. That's what you're telling me. Yeah, but why are you not applying the same logic that you're applying to women to yourself, John? Because if you're the victim of crime, someone comes and assaults you, someone twice your size with a black belt that you never got to in karate, come and takes you out, you're not going to be the one going, oh, well, I wish I'd done more karate, it's my fault, are you? You're going to be saying, that's outrageous, that bloke's just gone and nicked my phone.
Oh, for God's sake, listen, man.
Go on. You're a hypocrite.
If that woman... Well, just calm down. If that woman...
Yeah.
Had been approached, she would sense that there was a problem. The first thing she should have done is to stood up.
All right.
And then step back away from him. If you can face somebody and give yourself space, you've got an arm's length, then you've got room to swing. They don't know black belt karate, but there are ways and means of protecting
yourself.
You're
not answering my point, which is you're asking all the women in this country to do something that you yourself have never bothered to do to protect yourself from crime.
I do exercise. I know that if somebody came at me, I would have a go. These women normally don't. They don't think it's ever going to...
The women aren't fighting back enough.
Everybody believes it never going to happen to them.
Oh, John.
What do you mean, old John? You've got this idea that you're going to close off carriages, and that's all very well.
It's nothing with me, John. I'm just sick and tired of blokes like you blaming women. I'm sick and tired of men like you calling up to blame women for being the victim of crime, as if it's on them to prevent it, when it's the men that are the issue.
Them. I am not blaming them.
Yes,
I'm saying there's a way, a remedy of actually stopping things happening to them.
Yeah, you are blaming them. You said they shouldn't be running, they should be doing self-defence instead and it wouldn't happen. And if that woman had fought back, then maybe it wouldn't have happened. You're absolutely blaming them. At least own it. At least take risk. At least be honest about what you're doing, John. You're blaming the victims of the crime. That's what you're doing.
You need to be honest. Okay, I want you to be honest. What are you going to do then?
Let's just do it
your way. Just forget women having to look after themselves. What would you do?
Yeah, I just told you, John. I think a start is having a woman in carriages.
Tell me again the practical side. Do you really think they're gonna do that?
Yeah.
And what happens when the woman gets off the train and walks down the platform?
But this is a potential solution to men assaulting women on public transport. I'm not saying that it solves the issue across the board. Obviously, John, having women in carriages doesn't stop women being assaulted in pubs and clubs and bars or on the street. But nobody's pretending it is. But saying, oh, well, it might help in one setting is pointless because it won't help in every setting is a ridiculous
argument. What are you going to do when the woman gets off the train and walks down the platform and goes up the stairs?
But John, again, you're not. All right, so we shouldn't try and stop women being assaulted in a setting because they might be assaulted somewhere else. That's what you're saying. We might just
If a man has got an idea to get at a woman, he will just keep continue to fight until she's on her own. That's where she should be able to turn around and use some sort of force instead of using her energy to run down the road and as they do, which is very commendable. They should actually try to defend them. You've got arms. You can do it. There are ways of defending yourself.
If you're a 5-foot woman, and you're up against a 6-foot-8 attacker,
yes.
What's your message to that woman, John? Try harder.
The five foot
lift
woman
some more weight.
No, the height doesn't matter. If you remember,
my gosh, John, have you ever been a victim of crime yourself?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was your fault, wasn't it? What crime were you the victim of?
It's never the person's fault. If you're left alone, it's never your fault.
What crime were you the victim of?
Well, obviously somebody came at me once, and I was able to twist away from them, and I used a defence. I'm not going to discuss it on the phone of what I did.
But you haven't done the self-defence training that you want all the nation's women to do yourself, have you?
Yes, I haven't done it, but I know somebody that does it, and I'm saying there are means of doing it.
It's just the women that you want to do.
If women are going to get attacked, and by the way, schools should be teaching this as well.
Men get attacked as well, right? I've been violently attacked. A lot of men have been violently attacked. Should men all be doing self-defence training as well?
You are being particularly awkward, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm saying if your point is that people who are the victims of violent crimes need to do more to protect themselves, then why doesn't that apply to blokes as well?
I think you're particularly awkward. Does it not apply to men as well?
Should I not do self-defence training to protect myself?
Absolutely.
But you haven't done it.
Well, I have done it, yes.
You just said you hadn't done it.
Well, I mean, I've learned certain things. Right. I mean, my son is already a black belt, so I've obviously done things with him.
So your son's done it, but you've never bothered, but you want everybody else to, John.
What do you mean? We're not talking about going for belts.
I'm not talking about belts. You've called to tell me that if you don't want to be the victim of crime, you need to do self-defence training, and you've admitted several times that you haven't done it yourself.
Have you ever done karate or judo?
No.
Well, in those procedures, you have to learn to move. It takes go for a whole lesson, just learning to walk up and down. The point is, you can learn specific things to protect yourself. What do you think the police do when they go to learn training? They can disarm a man in quite a simple move, and there are ways of doing it, and women do it as well. There are ways, and you've got to learn them.
All right, John, we'll leave that there. I appreciate the view. I don't know. You cannot keep expecting women to do... Women are already doing enough, by the way, to stop themselves being... Women have to think through whether they're wearing heels. When you have a conversation with a woman about the things that go through their heads, the factors they have to consider to make sure that they are not assaulted by a man. Am I wearing the right shoes? Does someone know where I am? What time am I going to leave? Should I leave early so it's not dark? What's my route home? Should I only stick to main routes? Maybe I won't cycle because I'll get harassed. I certainly won't... Women are going through that process all the time, and you want them to now spend their time doing self-defence classes because you've got some objection, which I don't really understand, to part of a tube or a train being allocated purely to women. Surely that's a much better, more sensible, easier, more effective way of going about it. I think it is. John, thank you for the call. Let's talk to Alison, who's a first-time caller in Addleston in Surrey. Alison, welcome.
Thank you.
John says you need to do more self-defence, the nation's women.
Well, that's very unrealistic. I mean, he's obviously got no concept of how frightening it is for women, how intimidating men's behaviour can be. And you're right, there is this awareness that women have always in the back of their mind about their personal safety that I think men aren't really aware of. Mm. And so I don't object to these carriages in principle, but I do worry about the practicalities. And one of my concerns is that if there isn't room on this carriage, women who have to use the remainder of the train will be in a minority and therefore more vulnerable. And I think that's a bit of a concern of mine.
So, sorry, just to be clear, all the women have got on the women-only carriage, but it's full. And you're the next woman in line, and you get on the other carriage that's not women-only and is full of men, then that puts you at more of a risk than you would have been if it was mixed.
I think so. Gotcha. And I think, so for me, the issue is around enforcement. It's around awareness of other passengers. And you'd like to hope that someone like John would help out if a woman was in trouble and not just stand by and watch.
I think you'd say, well, he should have done more jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, so that's completely unrealistic and it's completely unfair. You know, and you're right, there is disadvantages physically, for example, between men and women. So it's really kind of unreasonable of him to have that position. But, you know, my view is that it is about education, it is about enforcement. And I do think there's some practical issues around how it's enforced. Mm. You know, this one carriage, how other women will be left more vulnerable in, you know, a predominantly male carriage if they can't get in the other one, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a good idea, but I do have concerns about some of it.
Very valid ones. Very valid ones, Alison, it seems to me. What else might work better or might work instead, do you think?
Well, obviously more staff is always useful and more sort of visible policing presence, more enforcement, more arrests of offenders and prosecutions, and the message that this behaviour is not acceptable, and more involvement of other passengers. When you see something happening, when you think there's something inappropriate going on, you know, have the courage of conviction and help out. Mm. And I think that would be, you know, a lot of people just sit there silently behind their newspapers, don't they, and don't want to get involved, and they have this sort of fear.
Yes.
And, you know, that's not always helpful, because sometimes, you know, then the onus is only on the woman, and, you know, it's unrealistic.
If it did happen, Alison, just, I'm going to ask every woman who comes on this question, would you be keen to use a women-only carriage if there was one available?
I've got a background in policing. Perhaps I'm a bit less intimidated by other people's behaviour, but that's not something that I would, you know, other women are, it's not a standard I would expect other women to have.
But you personally wouldn't use it.
I personally wouldn't use it because I'd want that space to be available for somebody else.
Fair enough. Alison, very first call. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you very, very much indeed. Tons of calls come in on this. Are women-only carriages something you would like to see? And is it really the way to stop violence against women and girls? Or are John and Alison in their very different ways right to say that the focus should be on something else instead? Better policing and presence, says Alison. More self-defence for women, says John. 03456060973. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And
I don't understand why this administration thinks stopping immigration is the single most important issue. Immigration has been a benefit to the United States.
Donald Trump's ICE agents arrest a 5-year-old boy in Minnesota and transport him 1,000 miles to detention facility in Texas in the latest sickening incident that is part of President Trump's migrant crackdown. We'll speak with the former mayor of Minneapolis after news headlines, 11:31 the time. Darrell Jackson.
It's understood the government's to radically reduce the number of police forces in England and Wales. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is expected to announce police reform next week and significantly cut the number of forces from its current level of 43. The Kremlin says Russian President Vladimir Putin has started his meeting with Donald Trump envoys Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to discuss a plan to end the war in Ukraine. The pair flew from Davos to Moscow earlier after the US president met Volodymyr Zelensky. And Andrew Gwynn has announced he's standing down as an MP, paving a possible return to Westminster for Andy Burnham. The independent member for Gorton and Denton was sacked as health minister last year for offensive WhatsApp messages. LBC weather. Spells of rain pushing northwards tomorrow. Brighter for southern and central areas, but staying wet in the northeast. A high of 9 degrees.
LBC. A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of a joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hi, babe. What a day. Fancy staying in tonight instead? Mackie's calling my name and I saw you can get £5 off if you spend £20 on the app. So, you in? Of course you are. Okay, bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. Save £5 when you spend £20 on food and drink via delivery. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Service and delivery fees apply. Valid once per week, 1st to the 31st of January. Participating restaurants. Serving times apply.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Hillary's huge winter sale is on. And now there's even more savings for the window wise, with an extra 10% off everything until the 2nd of February. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, keep the cold out and the cozy in with free thermal lining on our favourite curtains and Roman blinds. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:34. Loads of calls coming in on whether women-only carriages are or aren't a good idea. More on those in just a moment. First, I want to talk about an absolutely sickening story that's been reported today in the context of the immigration raids being conducted across the United States by the ICE agents that have been unleashed by Donald Trump to go and round up potentially illegal immigrants, including, it seems, a five-year-old. Nobody, it seems, will be spared the arrest by these ICE agents. Five-year-old Liam Ramos, a preschooler, arrested by ICE agents along with his father in the city of Minneapolis in the state of Minnesota and transported more than 1,000 miles to a detention center in Texas despite being just 5 years old. The defense from the US federal government, oh, well, we weren't after him. We were after his dad, and therefore his dad's an illegal immigrant, so they say, and so it's fair game. That's the defense. And if that doesn't appall you, I'm afraid, and I really would suggest you go find a mirror and have a look in it and give your head a wobble while you're at it, because it's deeply, deeply wrong. It's sickening, isn't it? Let's be honest. Let's talk about it with Betsy Hodges, the 47th mayor of Minneapolis from 2014 to 2018 and a member of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labour Party. Betsy, great to have you on LBC this evening. Thank you very much indeed for giving up your time to talk to us. Let me start, if I could, by your response to the reports today about the arrest of little five-year-old Liam Ramos.
You'd think it was satire, except it's actually happened today. You know, J.D. Vance was decrying that protesters made a 9-year-old cry in church while at the same time his ICE agents are arresting and abducting a 5-year-old. It is appalling, reprehensible, unsupportable, and yet part of the authoritarian playbook that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are absolutely set upon following.
Is this the new low when it comes to the arrests and the, as you said, the kind of abductions that ICE agents are carrying out across the country, but particularly in your city?
I mean, certainly it is a low. It's probably a new low. You know, there are many things they've been doing under cover of night that we will probably learn about later. But certainly it is a harbinger of great doom for America's democracy when you, without a warrant, you know, just based on someone's skin color, based on what you might think they might be about, they can be abducted away from their homes as adults or children.
J.D. Vance, you mentioned there, the vice president, was asked about this earlier, and his response to the arrest of that five-year-old, along with his dad, five-year-old in pictures wearing a little Spider-Man backpack, a young child. J.D. Vance says, well, those agents, what were they supposed to do, was the vice president's response.
What they were supposed to do was not arrest a five-year-old, right? And having a debate about a five-year-old is nonsensical in the context of an actual democracy. This doesn't happen in an actual democracy. But what Trump is doing in the city of Minneapolis is sending in an occupying force. This is what authoritarianism does. It picks one place at a time and it goes from place to place, leaving people elsewhere confused. Well, if it's not happening in my neighborhood, is it happening at all? But if it's happening one place in your country, it's happening in your whole country. But they didn't bank on the people of Minnesota. They did not bank on the people of Minneapolis who have met, you know, they know tyranny when it bashes in the door with its jackboot and no warrant. It knows what tyranny is, and it's responding with community and compassion and singing and coming together in unprecedented ways.
Tell us more about that, if you would, Betsy, about the reaction of the people of Minneapolis and how they've responded to what's going on in that city.
You know, all the people that I talk to, they're exhausted, they're scared, but they're also taking great hope and great resolve from what's happening with each other and what's happening in their community. The beauty of how people are coming together. They're singing together at places where ICE is trying to do raids. They are coming together to pack groceries and supplies for families for whom it's not safe to leave their homes. This is Minneapolis. This is Minnesota. These are the people that I know and that I love. And they did not reckon on this. I think they just thought there would be some sort of submission or some sort of welcome. Donald Trump has this mythical majority he thinks he has, but the majority of Americans disagree with him. And this is what it looks like when he finds out.
Just lastly, on that note, then, where do you think this ends? That the raids on the one hand, the backlash against them on the other. Where do we go next? How does this culminate?
Well, we are at a stalemate, and America gets to look ourselves in the eye and ask who we really are. And not even who we really are, because we have a history, you know, a very fraught history when it comes to communities of color, when it comes to all sorts of things. We get to look at each other and decide who we're going to choose to be moving forward. And do we want to live under a dictatorship? Do we want Trump to have occupying forces in America's cities and America's communities? Or do we want to take a good hard look at our Constitution and decide if we want to act like we believe in the Constitution that we have?
Thank you for coming on the program. Betsy Hodges is the 47th mayor of Minneapolis and a member of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. If you want to comment on that, please do. There's lots of things going on in the US right now that appall me and trouble me, but that is very, very high on the list. Little five-year-old boy being arrested and transported to a totally different part of the country. You think what the level of fear and confusion and angst that must have gone through that poor little boy's mind as he was seized by federal agents sent by Donald Trump is sickening, isn't it? 03456060973. As always, the number if you want to comment on that. 11:40 the time. For now, let's come back to your thoughts on women-only carriages. A model who was assaulted in London on a train today backs calls, and they're growing these calls, for those to be introduced on public transport. But are they a good idea? And would they help stop violence against women and girls? Chris is in Watford. Chris!
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I guess there was quite a few thoughts I had, but just today I was coming back on public transport. I've just got in now. And I think women generally have to, you know, they do have to think so much more about their safety coming home or going to work. I think particularly when, well, either way, actually, really, I think towards the end of the, you know, towards the late evening, I feel it always feels much worse. So, you know, there's five of us women traveling in different directions, and we've all got a WhatsApp group checking each other. Mm. Are you home? How far are you to go? When you get off the train, what do you do then? Have you got a car? And so none of us will really sleep until we've kind of made sure the other has got home.
Wow.
So I think men don't really have to really think like that at all.
No.
You know, and just even things like, you know, am I showing too much flesh, or, you know, can I get an easy escape? And I had a really bad incident when I was on a train from one side of London to the other, and for some reason I ended up getting quite squished in by a man who was very mentally unwell. He was threatening and then licked my arm, and I didn't feel like I could do anything.
Licked your arm?
Licked my arm, yeah. And was, yeah, and at the time he got on the train, he was acting odd and shouting. And I think most people, they just kind of put their head down and get into the newspaper. So I think in some ways, if you, you know, I asked the group, you know, how would you feel if there was women in carriages? And they all said they would be in favour. In Dubai, there are women, yeah, in Dubai, there are women-only taxis. So I don't see why we couldn't do something here. It's a case of, could we police it, of course. And also, what happens to the perpetrators? So yes, a person could get on the train where the women are and still kind of, you know, insult somebody. But then what happens to them? Are we being deterred? Are the men being deterred?
I think you would deter a lot of men. And you might be right that the sort of men that are intent on abuse, and John, to be fair to him, might be right that the sort of men that are intent on abusing women might still get on the carriage, but I think a lot of men would be put off. I really do. And if you know, your friend's a representative, Chris, and women want this to happen, then what good reason is there for it not, as far as I see it? Thank you for the call, Chris. Sue's on the line in Dorking. So is it a good idea? Do you think it would work? Chris says her friends are on board with it. I wonder whether you are.
I would really love to see this. Can I just give you a little tiny bit of background?
Of course.
I'm 58 years old, and when I was 13 or 14, a young boy, probably about the same age, grabbed me in my private places when I was coming off a tube. It was at Balham Tube Station, and there were men there, there were people who could have done something. Nobody did anything, and there was a lady about 50 who went and started reporting it, because it was at the time where you used to have people in the ticket offices, and she was saying, oh, he's done this, and nothing happened. They didn't do anything, but this has stayed with me, and I haven't been able to... I actually bunked off school for a couple of years because I couldn't get on the tubes. It stayed with me. It was horrible.
Because, sorry, Sue, you used to get the tube to school, and that experience put you off it so much that you missed 2 years of school.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And I was so lucky. I met a wonderful man who was brilliant, and I actually went on to become a head teacher myself. Mm. And I am, like, so into safeguarding the children. And, yeah, do whatever you can to keep children safe.
Because of your experience. What about Chris's point, and other people raise it as well, that actually, how do you enforce it? If a man wants to get on a woman's carriage and do what that boy did to you that day, that appalling crime, would a woman-only carriage actually stop those perpetrators?
If you've got people on the tubes or on the I don't know what it's called, but on the platform, then yes, it will. Because if you're not allowed to do it, you can't do it.
But some men would try. Some men would get on those carriages. No,
but
do you think other women would be more likely to come together to defend another woman in
absolutely
the way that those men didn't with you?
Absolutely. 100%.
Right.
100%. Yeah.
Right. And that's a separate issue. And I've heard so many cases like Sue's where something happens in plain sight and everybody else just sort of turns away and turns the other cheek, which is another issue that we should probably talk about as well. Thank you for the call, Sue. I'm sorry it happened to you. It's such a common experience, isn't it, for women going back decades and today as well. What do we do about it? And how much do you think all women carriages are a part of the solution? Let me know your thoughts. More calls to come just after this, 11:46.
on the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Donald Trump's Board of Peace, a motley collection of world leaders who've signed up, but an awful lot of Europeans are staying away, including Britain. What does this body represent? Is it a threat to the United Nations?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Hi Derek, Tara from Flash Designs here, hope you're well. Not sure if you've seen my emails from last month, but could you please pay my invoice? Thank you so much, bye. Hi, it's Tara, Flash Designs. Did you get my last voicemail? I know you're busy, but please pay my invoice today, if possible. Hello, again, it's Tara, again, politely nudging, again.
Still chasing unpaid invoices? Let Sage Copilot help do the chasing so you can get paid up to 7 days faster. Search Sage Accountant today.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website, and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
It might be mid-winter, but there's nothing mid about this offer. The new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra brings every winter sport moment to life as crisp as freshly laid snow. With its stunning 6.9-inch dynamic AMOLED display, razor-sharp resolution. But here's the real win. Claim £250 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ben Kentish. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Interesting. I get inundated with messages from women saying, yes, please give us women-only carriages to protect us from these men that are intent on harming us. And then lots of men getting as much saying, no, it's not necessary. It's definitely not necessary. Here's Simon, for example. Common sense is going out the windows. Nutcases and males intent on interfering with women will enter female carriages. It would be safer if other males could come to the rescue. All women carriages are arguably more dangerous, says Simon in Canterbury. Might be something in that, Simon, if men did come to the rescue, but what we've heard is that too many men don't, unfortunately. Quite a few people pointing out as well that it happens elsewhere in the world. Peter says in Dubai, on the tubes, there are what are called pink carriages, exclusively for women. And this is from Maya. I'm on holiday in Delhi. Lovely place. The metro has women's carriages on every train. Brilliant idea. So if it happens in Delhi and Dubai, why on earth shouldn't it happen in London and Birmingham and Manchester and Leeds? What good reason is there not to? Lynn's calling from Dublin to talk about whether it is or not a good idea. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm well, Lynn, thank you. How about yourself this morning?
Well, I'm grand, thanks. Your American correspondent a couple of minutes ago talked about coming together, which is about collectivity. And so when I hear this idea of women's only carriages, I find it quite frightening. I'm 5'3" at my tallest, and I'm 62. And I feel safer in a group of people of different genders, different ethnicities, than I do anywhere else. Because it's about collectivity, and it's not about segmenting us. For me, as a woman, the notion of women-only carriages is women safe, men evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true.
I interpret it slightly differently. I don't think it says for a minute that all men are evil or that most men are, you know, sort of intent on attacking women. But we know, Lynn, don't we, that too many are. And if women having a place where, in theory, at least they can go on a train or a tube to be safe from that, then
what you're suggesting there is that there is a greater propensity in men to be evil than there is in women.
Not evil in general, but when you look at violent crime, almost all the perpetrators are men. And we don't have a problem, we don't have a big problem with women assaulting and sexually abusing other women. The perpetrators are almost entirely men.
True, but in public transport, so let's talk practicalities. You've got one carriage at the end of a tube station that's women only, and it's 5 o'clock in Stansted on a Friday evening. It doesn't work.
Because it fills up too quickly.
But it's just also, I, as a woman, as a 5'3", 62-year-old woman, feel safer surrounded by people of different ethnicities, different genders.
Why is the ethnicities? What's the impact of the ethnicity element?
Because it is about making, it's about that collective. It's about people being together and feeling safe being together. And I will sit down beside somebody of a different ethnicity to me deliberately.
Is part of it, Lynn, the point that Simon was just making there from, was it Canterbury, I think? Yeah, Simon Canterbury. That actually, if something does happen and one man starts behaving in a way that is absolutely out of order towards a woman, that it's better if there are other men there to intervene than only women?
Oh, no. What I do then is I go up to the woman and I go, "Hi, Mary, how are you? Haven't seen you in ages."
But would you feel safer knowing there were men around to jump in as well as other women?
No, wouldn't. I feel equally as safe if there are women there.
Okay.
It's about protecting each other. Collective, as we talked, it's about collective protection.
Okay. Lynn, I'll take your point. Thank you very much indeed for the call. Let's go to Newham, East London, and have a chat with Dee this evening. Evening, Dee.
Hello. Not a good idea.
Okay.
It isn't the answer. Who is going to enforce it? There are going to be some men or groups of men that are going to enter these carriages merely because it's only women. And they're going to enter those carriages. And then what do? Who is going to ask them politely to leave? They're not going to leave. I think the answer is more BT police and enforcement to travel through the carriages and make TfL do a big announcement that this is happening. So these perpetrators will never know when an enforcement officer is going to come through the carriage.
So more of a police deterrent. Could you not do both, though? Could you not have more police on the tubes and the trains, which absolutely is a good thing, for sure, and have women-only carriages as well? Because if there were more police there, it would be easier to enforce the female-only carriages.
No, I think you talked about different countries, but there's different laws. In Dubai, the laws are so strict, you cannot carry on with any of that behaviour. They probably have the carriages, maybe due to religious reasons, I'm not sure. But the laws are different. Here, laws are weak, so these perpetrators know they can get away with it. It's never going to go to court. They can hardly catch them on CCTV. You know, that their needs. And talking about men that talked about the self-defence. Listen, I've got a load of mouth. I can look after myself. I don't do self-defence, but I'm confident. But even I wouldn't know if something was happening, whether I would freeze or not. Because you don't know if you're in that position. My daughter's 20. She's an athlete. She travels all over London. And so I have to follow her. I have to go with her.
Yeah.
Sorry
to jump in. Can I just ask you about John's call? I'm interested in your perspective as a woman to John saying, "Well, if you don't want to be attacked, then go and learn martial arts. And if you are attacked, then you should be able to, you should be trained in how to fight back."
No, completely out of order. Men have just got the physicality of overpowering most women.
And as I said,
but John wants you to go out and learn karate to try to narrow that gap, to try to bridge that gap in physicality.
Even your karate might not take somebody down.
Yeah.
I think what you need to learn is not the physical, it's the mental side of stuff, because some people freeze, they can't even speak. Yeah. I've learned to shout to draw attention to things, and usually someone that's being dodgy will run.
It'd be nice though, Dean, wouldn't it, if all the things that women have to learn, you know, another example that you're giving there, if maybe the men learnt to stop abusing and harassing and intimidating and assaulting women, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Maybe the men should do a little bit more learning, because the women have done a lot of learning and how to deal with this stuff for, well, centuries, millennia. Dee, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for getting in touch. Final word on this one, I think, for now. Josh is a brand new caller in Penzance in Cornwall. Hi, Josh. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
What made you pick up the phone tonight, Josh? Good to have you with us.
Well, I used to be a train conductor many, many years ago, and I worked for the railway in various different capacities. I do think the principle of it is a good idea. I mean, I've got a sister who lives in the southeast. I used to live in the southeast as well. And, you know, I don't particularly feel comfortable knowing that she's potentially travelling up and down to London or on the south coast on her own, knowing the sort of people that unfortunately do tend to travel around, especially late in the evening, who do think it's okay to assault women. I think the problem is, as a few people have sort of pointed out, is the enforcement of it. And also a lot of the trains, especially in the southeast, are only operated by a driver. And physically, there's only a driver on those trains, probably 99% of them late in the evening. There's hardly any enforcement officers out on trains.
So if a bloke gets on the window in a carriage, the driver stops the train and walks, there's no way to enforce it, you're saying, Josh?
Basically, the driver would have to
call the police.
Physically drive. Yeah. I mean, I worked in a railway control centre, and yes, the driver would instigate a telephone call to the signalman, who would then contact the control centre, who would then contact the police.
Yeah. So, man gets on women in a carriage. Driver has cameras, presumably in that carriage.
Not all trains have the modern trains have got cameras in every carriage that the driver can actually access, but a lot of the older trains do have CCTV, but the drivers aren't able to actually view it. So the only way the driver's really going to be able to do anything is to drive the train to the next station where he can perhaps intervene. But the large problem as well is that some trains, especially the older type on, say, Southeastern, a lot of them, when you've got two or three of the trains coupled together, there aren't physical walkways between each section of the train.
Is there not a case here, given it does happen in Delhi and Dubai and other places? Is there not a case, do you think, Josh, of where there's a will, there a way? And I'm not saying it's going to be straightforward, and I totally hear what you're saying about some of the practical issues, and other people have raised them as well. But this can't be beyond us, can it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's about money, isn't it? And getting enough money into policing. And the other, of course, the problem is at the moment is, you know, the government are going through nationalising the railway. We've got a very segregated system where we've still got some private operators.
And I hear what you're saying. There's a difference, and there's a bit of a postcode lottery in how it's run. Josh, I'm out of time on that one. Thank you, though, for the first time call. Hope we'll speak again soon. Coming up next, I want to hear about your experience of going to university and whether you think, for you at least, it was a complete waste of time and money.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, it's understood the Home Secretary is planning to dramatically reduce the number of police forces in England and Wales. There are currently 43. Ministers think it will free up cash by reducing back office functions, but it will be well after the next election before we see any benefits. Baroness Mary Bosted, a Labour peer who spent a year looking at the Police Federation, told LBC it's clear reducing the number of forces could be a benefit.
When you look at the pressures on the police, and this we did a lot of interviewing police officers, and the need for greater numbers on the front line, greater protection and equipment for police officers, greater investment in technology to make their work much more doable, then it seems to me that it is entirely logical and sensible to have bigger forces.
The first talks between Ukraine, Russia and the US aimed at ending the war in Ukraine will take place later. Officials from all three countries will meet in the UAE following Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky's meeting in Switzerland yesterday.
Meanwhile, the French president revealed they've intercepted a sanctioned Russian tanker in the Mediterranean. The French mission was conducted with the UK, which gathered and shared intelligence. The UK says it will look at other ways it can support the peace process in Gaza after refusing to sign up to Donald Trump's so-called Board of Peace. The government's concerned about Russia's possible involvement. The UK's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation has told LBC that the government's delay on social media bans for under-16s is regrettable. The House of Lords voted in favour of banning under-16s from social media. It will now go to the Commons for MPs to discuss it, but there'll be a three-month consultation before there are any changes. Speaking to LBC, Jonathan Hall KC says he's told the government not to delay on the issue.
It's impossible to regulate content online at the level that you'd need to do to keep children safe. Either you'd have to have individuals reading every single post. If you think about the billions and trillions of posts, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
Or you have to have some machine, some algorithm, and that will make catastrophic mistakes. Either it will cut down everything so we can't have a normal chat on WhatsApp or whatever, or it won't work at all.
And a by-election in Greater Manchester could pave the way for Andy Burnham's return to Westminster. Independent MP Andrew Gwynn is standing down due to medical reasons. LBC weather, spells of rain pushing northwards later, brighter for southern and central areas today, but staying wet in the northeast, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is Friday morning, 12:03 is the time, and you're listening to Ben Kentish here on LBC for one final hour this week, during which we're going to talk about university and specifically whether or not for you, if you did go, it was worth the time and the money. It's been reported today that two-thirds of university graduates now aren't even paying off the interest on the loans that they've accrued to fund their tuition fees. That's before you even get to paying off the loan itself. Two-thirds of them aren't even getting close to paying off the interest on the loan, which is just yet another indication, isn't it, that increasingly, more and more, university, for a lot of people, is a waste of time. And it's certainly a waste of money. And I wonder whether that's your experience. Did you go? Did you get your degree? Because your parents, your teachers, society, the government, Tony Blair told you that you should. Get out of university with what would now be likely tens and tens of thousands of pounds of debt. Try and get a job and think, my goodness, what have I done? Why have I spent 3 years wasting my time, wasting my money, only to find that it's got me absolutely nowhere? If that's your experience, we'd love to hear from you. 03456060973. Conversely, if you went to university, loved it, think you wouldn't be doing what you're doing now, you wouldn't be the person you are now, maybe, if you hadn't gone and got that degree, but also gone and got that experience, perhaps more importantly, those 3 years of your life out and about, finding yourself, meeting new people, trying new things, away from home, learning to become independent. Perhaps you think university does still have a value. Really interesting experience with this. I loved my time at university. Absolutely loved it. Genuinely one of the best times of my life. The degree was a waste of time. Didn't learn anything particularly significant, I would say, from it. Certainly don't think I needed to do it to do the job I'm doing now. Think I could easily be doing the job I'm doing now, and in fact, all the jobs I've ever done, had I not got that degree or any degree at all. But I don't regret going to university. And the reason I don't regret it for one single second is because it genuinely was such a good time. Made friends for life there, got involved in all sorts of things that I never would have had the opportunity to get involved with had I not gone to university, did sports that I'd never done before, tried sort of, what did I try? I can't remember, bits of drama and music and stuff that I wasn't very good at, but had the opportunity to experience because everything's kind of on offer at university, meeting people from countries and backgrounds and sort of with experiences that I'd never encountered before and haven't encountered since in some cases. The life experience for me, personally, and I appreciate this is not everybody's story, but for me personally, completely and utterly unique and invaluable. I don't think that could have been replicated at all had I gone and done a vocational qualification, had I done an apprenticeship. I think that is quite unique to going to university. And the other thing that makes me just hesitate a little bit, before I completely buy into this narrative that university is just now a complete waste of time and money, is that university, the point of what university used to be about, has changed pretty significantly. The point of university, the reason they were set up, the point of them until quite recently, was this was an opportunity, probably for the last time in your life, at the age of 18, as sad as that is, to go and study something you find interesting and immerse yourself in a subject that you love, that you're passionate about, that you wanted to explore in more detail, not because it might help you get a job, not because it might help you get a decent salary at the end of it, but just because you wanted to do it. And I do think we are losing sight of the value of learning and education for the sake of learning and education. I studied politics. I loved it. I loved my degree. Was it useful? Not really. Do I need to know various political philosophers and what Plato said and what Thomas Hobbes thought about the state in order to report on Westminster politics? Not at all. It's completely irrelevant. But my goodness, it was interesting. And that's what I think we're sort of missing. You know, if you want to be a, say you might want to be a lawyer or a banker, but you just love French, or you love, I don't know, theatre studies, or you love gardening, or I don't know, whatever it is you've chosen to study. Now you can study everything under the sun. You study Harry Potter studies at some universities, for goodness sake. Good on you. If you just want to go and spend 3 years of your life studying that before you settle down and start thinking about work. And that's what we're missing, I think, in the whole conversation about universities. That it's not supposed to just be, will this get me a job? How much money will it help me earn? We've lost sight of the actual value in just studying and learning about something purely because you enjoy it. So those are two reasons that I don't think university is always a waste of time. But I also appreciate that a lot of people feel that it is. And if that's your story, we'd love to hear it this evening. 0345 6060 973, or this morning, I should say. It's officially Friday morning. Do you regret going to university? If you do, why? And if you did go and you don't regret it, would love to hear what you got out of it. Maybe you didn't go to university. I'm really interested to hear your perspective as well on whether you think you missed out on anything because you chose not to go, or whether you think actually you're very glad you didn't and you're much better off as a result. That number for you once more this morning, 0345 6060 973 to call or WhatsApp. You can text 84850 or say Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Let's have a chat about all things university with Connor Cotton, Managing Director of Not Going to Uni, a platform that supports young people exploring options aside from uni. Connor, very good morning to you. This latest story about graduates, two-thirds of graduates not even paying off the interest on their student loans, let alone the loan itself, is this another sign that universities are fast becoming a waste of money?
Yeah, I think ultimately, the information that's being put out in press now and just before Christmas and in the lead up to the tail end of last year is all facing towards this. I mean, there was the stat that was released by the Centre for Social Justice, released in December, that basically said that 5 years after, £5,000 more than the average graduate, but also be debt free. Mm. So you're getting information like this constantly being drip fed. We're also seeing in the last 6 to 12 months a record number of applications for apprenticeships for most employers in the country. So all this is basically refocusing the idea that actually the idea of not going to uni is becoming much more sought after amongst these generations.
Is that purely because of the finances? I mean, you know, £9,500 fees, a hefty interest rate on student loans, which I think even my generation didn't have to pay. Have we kind of priced young people out of university in a way that, you know, maybe we should sort of we should stop and think about, Connor?
I think it's a mixture of things. I think finance plays a huge part, especially with the amount of coverage around, you know, cost of living and things like this. There's changing attitudes, let's face it. You know, maybe 10 years ago, for example, the idea of not going to uni amongst a lot of families was probably frowned upon. But actually the idea of not going to uni now, there's not as much. Yeah, there will still be some pushback from some families and elder members of the family, but actually that's less so. So those changing attitudes means young people are feeling more empowered to make their own choice. But also there's just a lot more publicity on options, you know, with the likes of ourselves that are not going to uni. There's a lot more publicity, careers guidance, careers information, and schools are being pushed to do more to actually give young people the most tools possible to make a better educated decision when they're at the end of that journey.
So is it a good thing, would you say, on balance, that fewer and fewer young people are making the decision to go to uni and instead looking at alternatives?
I think there will still be people that will go to university regardless. Mm-hmm. One, because they want the lifestyle, or two, their career goals, their aspirations mean they have to. For example, they're going down a heavy medical route, for example. But I think it's a good thing that, especially in those subjects, for example, like law, where actually you can go and be a fully qualified solicitor without going to university, that if less people are going down that route and going doing the practical hands-on learning experience, that's going to be amazing for the sector. That's going to be amazing for young people because they're debt-free. And also for the sectors, it's going to open themselves up to a whole new audience that maybe they typically haven't previously engaged.
That target that was set by Tony Blair and his government to get at least half of young people going to university, in hindsight, was that a catastrophe as a policy?
I think now it's proven to be, because actually all the data and all the information and all of the talk now amongst employers, schools, colleges is actually that probably won't be the right decision for 50% of students leaving school or college. At the end of the day, I think if you got a careers leader on the show and said to them, are 50% of your students ready to go to university or should they go to university? The answer would be no. So just off that fact alone, that will never work.
Even if it's no longer as necessary, and I think this is clearly a good thing in order to, you know, get the sorts of jobs that you've been talking about, Connor. You know, for a lot of us that did go to university, it wasn't so much the actual formal education or the kind of impact on us going on to the world of work after. It was the just kind of ability to get away from home, get away from family as much as we love them, you know, kind of find ourselves, to use that cliche, you know, do all sorts of, try all sorts of things, sport, acting, music, whatever it might be. Do you sort of miss out on all of that by not going, even if it doesn't harm you career-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think the university experience from that perspective is completely different, right? It's very hard to compare.
Unique,
I guess I guess the only thing you could maybe compare it with is, for example, like going and joining the military, right? Where you get to go and play. If you're in the RAF, you get to, I know you're an apprentice there, you get to play in sports teams there and you get to do this and you get to do that. However, you get a very different social side. You know, for example, I didn't go to university, and I went and visited a lot of friends who went to university when they were there. And the difference was I had money, they didn't. So when we wanted to do something, often they couldn't, right? They couldn't actually afford it. They couldn't do this or they couldn't do that. So my social setting was very different. I was going out with colleagues from work. I was doing this. I was playing Power League on a Tuesday night and so on and so forth. So there's a different journey, and it's very hard to compare the two like for like. There's some similarities, but there's also some differences, and rightly so, because you're mixing with different crowds. You know, if I go into a workplace, a corporate workplace, I'm not necessarily mixing with a lot of people of a similar age in a similar boat. I'm probably mixing with a wide variety of demographics and age groups.
Connor, thank you very much for coming on. That's Connor Cotton, Managing Director of Not Going to Uni, a platform that supports young people exploring options other than university. What about you? Are you glad you went? And if you are, why? What did you get from the experience that university gave you? If you did go and you regret it, would love to hear why, how it's turned out for you. It's hard being a graduate at the moment, and a lot of graduates that I know are wondering why they did effectively what they were told to do, go to university, get the degree, only to find it's completely irrelevant for the job they want to do, or they're competing with another, you know, God knows how many people who have also got degrees. There is an argument that university had a value when fewer people went, because it marked you out in some way. It gave you a qualification that maybe most people didn't have. Given that not far off half the country has been going to university in recent years, is it now a waste of time? Do you regret it? Or do you still think maybe that there is a value in going to university from your experience. I think there is still. I really strongly, it depends where you go and what you study and what you want to do. But I still think there is a value to going to university for a lot of young people. Wonder about you. 0345 6060 973 for your thoughts on that. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC. Your calls after this. The time is 12:16.
LBC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This is Sarah's last game before she does her self-assessment. Like her last game, and the last game before that. Classic. Come on, Sarah! The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Sarah. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 12:17. Your calls coming in on going to university, whether you still think it's worth the money and the time and it's a good use of your education, or whether there are now better options. Maybe doing an apprenticeship, maybe just getting a job and working your way up like a lot of young people are now trying to do instead. 0345 6060 973. Let's talk to Campbell in Coventry this morning. Morning, yeah. Campbell.
Morning, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you. How about you this Friday morning?
Yeah, I'm sound as a pound, and I did come on once before, and I'm not really into a lot of subjects, but I thought this one's very interesting. And
that's a backhanded compliment, isn't it, Campbell? I don't like most of what you talk about, but this one's all right.
No, no, sorry, you picked me up wrong there. What I said joking. Is there's a huge number of political subjects I've got no interest in.
Fair enough. Absolutely right.
I think you do a very good job.
I'm only winding you up, Campbell.
But once or twice when I pick up on one, I think, you know, if I can add some perspective, then, you know, let's see if I can help.
I'm sure you can. Fire away. Talk to me about universities then.
Well, I'm at the sort of end of my career, but what I'd like to say is that, you know, when you're 16, 17, 18, 19, God, life is difficult, isn't it? You're trying to work out what's your best route forward. You want to. There's so many challenges, so many things you want to do. You're trying to work out, what can I do? So let me just explain it from my point of view. I was in that boat, obviously, when I was 16, 17. I came from a very humble background. And without going into the details, my life at that point would have been mapped into, a physical manual job for the next, 45 years, as long as I was able to continue doing it. So as I was not the cleverest, but I was bright enough to pass exams. I did my first degree in what in them days was called business administration. Unfortunately, it was just at the beginning of Mrs. Thatcher and all the, as you know, all the cutbacks. Industry was being, you know, absolutely cut back. So there was no jobs for graduates, apart from, I think, accountancy jobs, which I didn't want to do. So I actually went back and did the manual job for a couple of years. Nowadays, they call it a gap years, don't they?
Yep, they do.
However, I went on and did a master's degree in a slightly more specialised business subject. And to cut a long story short, that then allowed me to build a 30 plus year career, ending up on the board of directors of a major global company. So, appreciating that I'm talking about the late 70s and we're now in the 2020s, but what that did for me is, number one, it gave me how can I describe for it, a ladder or an escape route from a life of potential drudgery, of which I'm not sure I would have been able to do it, that manual labour work after 40 years, and probably then would have had a retirement about 2 or 3 years. But the most important thing I think it gave me was that wherever you were in your career, in the company, you were facing up to people, whoever they were. They could be the CEO, they could be a senior vice president, they could be from a supplier, they could be from a customer, and I felt you were on a level playing field because,
right,
you know, my qualifications were equally as good as what theirs were.
As in, you don't think you would have been taken seriously or as respected as much had you not got that degree, Campbell?
No.
Right.
And just to add a little extra one in that, I'm not quite sure I would have had the personal confidence. Because, you know, when you're brought up in a very humble background, you kind of get the feeling that you're maybe not quite as good.
Right.
I don't speak with a posh accent, as you might have noticed.
And university gave you that sort of validation, yes, and that sense that you are just as good as anybody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that allowed me to make a lot of money, I'll be honest with you.
Good for you.
Now, at the end of my career, this is why I phoned in, really, I then started doing part-time lecturing. So this is bang up to date, you know, doing MBA courses, you know, in global subjects. And what I would say to graduates and people considering a graduate career at the moment, you have got it tough. Now, leaving, and you've gathered I'm not a politician, okay? Leave politics aside. Looking at what we've had to contend with, we've had austerity 2008, 2009. Then we had Brexit. Then we had COVID. Then we had Putin invading Ukraine. And now we got Trump. Now, whatever you think about all of those different issues, that's fine. But every single one of those has had an impact on the economy and the opportunities for graduates.
Yep.
Now, back in my day, in the late 70s, yeah, we had Mrs. Thatcher. And again, whatever you thought of her, that's fine. But people will remember that we're around at the time that everything was closing down and there was no jobs for graduates. So what I'm really saying is, stick with it. If you think it's the right thing for you, if you think you can get yourself through a university degree course, look around very carefully. Make sure you go to the right place. You will, if it's right for you, stick with it, because I'm living proof that it will bring you a very rewarding, lucrative lifestyle.
But yep. Campbell, as you just said yourself, times have changed a lot. Lot. And a degree at the moment is no longer a guarantee of anything at all, is it? As you said, these graduates have got firsts in this, and I've spoken to people on this show who've got double firsts from Oxbridge in astrophysics. I remember talking to somebody, and they couldn't get a job.
That's right, but a degree is only one aspect of the whole gamut of things that you can offer to a potential employer.
Right.
I mean, if you take something like attitude, right? I mean, what's your attitude towards timekeeping? What's your attitude towards the corporate goals of the company?
But if those things now matter more, then what's the point of getting the degree at all? Why not just go straight into the world of work, get your attitude right, as you say, turn up on time, give your all, and forget about going to university?
Yeah, and if that's what seems to be right for you, then great, because, I mean, apprenticeships, you know, there's a growing demand for plumbers, for EV technicians, for people that can fit solar panels, you know, we've got AI coming along. Now, AI will create jobs as well as it will take away jobs. That's fine. What I'm saying is, it's not the case that university is a bad choice for everybody. That's really what I'm saying, okay?
And did you worry that there's kind of a narrative emerging that actually university is just a waste of time, full stop?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, I get horrified when I hear these people talking about Mickey Mouse degrees. And I won't be rude, you know, when I'm on the radio, but... I'll phrase it like this, okay? What on earth are they talking about? A Mickey Mouse degree.
Well, what they're talking about, let me just answer that quickly. Yeah, what they're talking about is a degree that doesn't do anything to help you get a good job or a good salary. That's what they mean. Your response, Campbell?
My response is that I graduated in 1983 with a BA degree in business administration.
Yeah.
Right? Which covered accounts, finance, marketing, economics, operations research, which was computers at the time, and what you would call today human resource management. I couldn't get a job. Because I repeat that, and again, not a political point, people that were there then will remember this, Mrs. Thatcher, austerity, everything was closing down. However, I never regretted it for 1 minute that I'd done that. Mm. I went and did a manual job for a couple of years. I took a step backwards. What you'll find in a career is, and this is a you know, maybe sounds a bit arrogant, but it's I think it's quite good advice. Sometimes you have to take two steps back to take three steps forward.
Mm.
That degree that you've got, that certificate, which proves that you've got the intellectual capacity to understand the subject, to critically appraise that subject,
yes,
and then to present your knowledge of that subject to your peers.
But if millions of others, of young people, have also got that degree, then it doesn't help you stand out in any way anymore. That's the concern, isn't it? But when you went to university, it was a kind of, as you say, it was almost a quality stamp. It showed that you had something that others didn't. But now when, you know, millions of young people are leaving university with these degrees, employers are saying, well, it doesn't count for much because everyone's got one.
Yeah, and this is coming on to the other thing that I was saying, which is that as a country, there are far fewer opportunities now than there were really when I graduated.
This is the issue. And this is why more and more young people are saying, right, given how hard it is now to get on in the world of work, can I afford to, financially and in other senses, spend 3 years of my time reading books and going to lectures? Or should I just try and get in and get an apprenticeship or get an internship and start that way? Campbell, lovely to talk to you and fascinating to listen to you. Thank you very much, Lee, for calling in this morning. Mark's another first-time caller. Loads of first-time callers this evening. Hi, Mark, in Egham, in Surrey. Morning.
Good morning, Ben. Yes, I'm a first-time caller, so I'm a bit nervous, but I look forward to speaking to you.
You will be great, I can tell already. What made you pick up the phone for the first time this morning, Mark?
Yeah, so I picked up the phone because I heard you were talking about universities, and so I thought it'd be relevant, since I'm in university at the moment. I'm first year business management student. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm really enjoying it. I've gained, you know, so many more friends, got a much bigger social life than compared to what it was before. But I feel like the fees I'm paying, so £9,535, is just not worth it, to be honest with you. We only study sort of 6 months of the year, so we have our lectures and seminars and workshops starting from sort of October-ish, early October till March. And then we have two exams in May, and that's it. And I just think, you know, for what we consider to be full-time students, we're only doing like half a year's course.
Mm.
And even during the week, it's only 3 days a week. I've got 2 days off in the week.
Wow. So you're not getting a lot of value for your money, Mark.
No, exactly. And to think when you know, 3 year degree, so that's £28,000, £30,000. And then the accommodation on top of that's a further £20,000. So that's £50,000 with no guaranteed job at the end of it. That does raise a concern. But I've got a placement year planned in year three. So I'll take a year out and then hopefully get a job. But even that's not guaranteed. But I think also when it comes to on getting a job, it's more the graduates who I've spoken to complain about the fact that you have to do a series of online tests. If you submit the initial application, and then if you're successful in that, you get get invited to do a series of online psychometric aptitude tests.
Right.
And it's those tests which can filter you out, and then you can't even get to an interview to really prove yourself.
Right.
Because those tests are marked by a robot rather than a human being.
So you can't even get to convince a human that you're worth a look.
Yeah, exactly.
So the course isn't worth the money. And I've got to say, in my experience, we worked it out when I was at university. I think we worked out that we were paying something like £400 per actual hour that we had any sort of tuition, which is nuts. What about the rest of it, Mark? Because you say you're having a good time and you're sort of making friends and so on. Is the £9,500 worth that, maybe?
Yeah, I think for that element, yes, it is. But obviously we're explicitly told right from the start the £9,500 specifically for the tuition fees, but then I guess when you add in all the societies and the social aspect, it is. But
because you're buying the whole I don't know if you are you living at home with family or are you living on campus?
No, I live away from home.
So you're getting the whole university experience. So you're, I guess you're kind of buying the whole experience as well as just the education, if you see what I mean.
Well, to some extent, yes. But the thing is, everything on campus, and I was a bit disappointed in, quite shocked, really, when I arrived here, that, you know, I thought there'd be student discounts, I'd be able to get, you know, prices a bit cheaper, you know, to buy things. And it's really not that at all. You know, everything, all the cafes on campus, all the prices have gone up. Everyone complains about it. And, you know, just to go out, you know, for a meal with my friends in the town will cost, you know, so much money that we hardly do it.
So that's impacting on your university experience as well. Have you got a student loan, if you don't mind me asking?
So I do for the tuition fees, but the
Is it a consolation to you knowing that you'll only pay back that loan once you're earning above £25,000 or not?
We have to obviously earn a certain amount to start paying it back. It doesn't bother me because I know it's only a small increment of your salary over but a certain
That's what I mean.
Period.
It's not like you are kind of racking up all this debt that you'll have to start paying back immediately. You only pay it back once you're kind of relatively able to do so. I just wonder if that's sort of any consolation at all, Mark.
It's low security on that loan, so it's not like a secured loan.
I just think it's outrageous that you have to pay interest at all. I mean, you didn't when they were introduced. And I think it was George Osborne that changed that, like he changed so many other things for the worse. And suddenly thought, all right, we can make a fast buck from some students here by making them pay interest. Do you know what you're paying, Mark? What rate you pay?
I think it's somewhere between 7% and
9%. You're mad. It's just... Why? One thing, if the government wants to keep putting up tuition fees, fine. Well, it's not fine. I think it's pretty outrageous. But one thing they could do is stop ripping off students by then charging interest on the loans they have to pay. Thank you, Mark. No need to be nervous. You're a great first-time caller, and I hope we'll speak again in the next few weeks. Keep your calls coming in on universities. Is it worth the money? 03456060973. Or do you regret going and getting your degree? Talk more about that and the show that has gripped the entire nation, I think, reaches its finale tonight, I should say. In a minute, we'll speak about how The Traitors has become so popular and whether that popularity is sustainable. News headlines first, Darrell Jackson.
The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically under major reforms expected to be announced by the Home Secretary next week. It'll be the largest overhaul of policing in decades in an effort to tackle what government sources call an epidemic of everyday offences. Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukrainians are living like the film Groundhog Day, claiming nothing has changed since he last addressed Davos. He's also revealed the first trilateral talks between Ukraine, Russia and the US will take place today. And suspended Labour MP Andrew Gwynne's confirmed he'll stand down from Parliament on health grounds. There are rumours potential leadership challenger Andy Burnham will fight for the vacant Greater Manchester seat. LBC weather, spells of rain pushing northwards later, brighter for southern and central areas, but staying wet in the northeast, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
On day 3 of leftovers for lunch, have a day off. Switch it up with a double cheeseburger for $2.49 on the McDonald's Saver menu.
Leftovers left the chat.
Talk about saver satisfaction. Served from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before, but that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully. Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:36 is the time. Talk more about the Traitors and what makes it just such good television. In a couple of minutes' time, let's talk to Chris in Milton Keynes first about whether university is a complete waste of time and money, Chris. What do you think? Morning.
Evening. So I didn't go to university. I was in college. I did a year of a media course, and then I did 2 years of TV and radio. And at the time of, when deciding whether I go to university or not, when all of my friends around me were going, I decided not to. I went out into the real world and got 3 years worth of hands-on experience. And, 16, 17 years later, I'm in a career that I want to do, and I've loved doing it ever since. The time that I could have gone to university and had the social experience, I went and worked on cruise ships for 3 years. So,
I bet that was fun.
It was great.
Gosh, that sounds fun. What were you doing on the ships, Chris?
So it was shipwide event technical. So okay. Sound.
And where did you go?
Alaska, mostly. So the west coast of the US down to Mexico.
Lovely. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. But my friends around me that went to university, one in particular, she decided to go to Nottingham University and did 3 years in journalism.
She rubbish. Really stuff. Why would you want to study that nonsense? Don't do. What a stupid career choice.
Nuts, right? So she studied 3 years. She really wanted to do it, and then at the end of it, got all the debts to go with it, and didn't have a journalism career to go to. So now she's an admin assistant in a school.
Really.
That she doesn't really want to do.
Journalism is one of those careers where you just don't need a degree to be good at it. You don't need some of the best journalists I've ever worked with. In fact, quite a lot of them, more experienced journalists from a time when it was you would start out at your local newspaper as a trainee reporter as a 16-year-old. None of them had got degrees, and they were the best journalists that I ever worked with. And yet, there's this kind of mindset that you got to go and get your journalism master's. You don't. But a lot of young people feel they do, I think, in that profession, and many others.
Sure, yeah, I agree.
Do you feel you missed out on anything, Chris, at all, by not going?
Not at all. No, not at all.
What about the life experience bit, the social bit, the fun?
That's what I mean. I got that through working abroad, working on ships.
Right, so you didn't feel you missed out on it, yeah.
No, not at all. And the career that I'm in now, I still have that social environment. I've made really good friends in the industry I'm in, and it's a great industry to be in, I wouldn't change my time.
It's a really important reminder, actually, to put to what I was saying, Chris, about the kind of the life experience of university, that there are lots of other ways to grow as a person, to experience different cultures, to sort of be more independent, to get away from home. You don't have to. You can work on a cruise ship. You can live abroad for a bit. You can travel. There's other alternatives to going to university. Lots of them.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Chris, lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed for calling in to talk about your experiences. Someone, one of the many people, I think, who didn't go and hasn't looked back once. Chris, great call. More to come in just a moment on university. Is it worth the time and money, or do you think, like Chris, that actually for you it was much better not to go? In just a moment, 0345 6060 973, as always, for your calls on that. First, though, 12:39 the time this morning. Just want to reflect for a couple of minutes on one of the best TV shows I think that has ever been made in this country, which is a big claim, but I will stand by it and defend it. It is, of course, The Traitors, the BBC reality TV show that has gripped much of the nation since it started, I think about 3 years or so ago now. Season 4's hotly anticipated finale will be screened tonight, including in cinemas across the country. So popular has the show become. If you haven't seen it, honestly, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life? Go and watch it. Watch it on catch-up. Start from the start. It is brilliant. It's superb TV. I haven't seen tonight's episode, so please, I don't want spoilers. I'm going and watch it. But let's talk about all things Traitors with Josh Rom, entertainment journalist and a big Traitors fan, Josh, I hear. Good to have you with us this morning. It's just so good, that show. Why is it so good, do you think? What makes it such brilliant television?
I mean, there's a number of reasons why I think it's great television. First and foremost, it's great to be with you. And yes, I am an original Traitors super fan, have watched it since season one, since the
first series. So
I'm very familiar with it. I think there's a number of different factors. First and foremost, the format of it. Because what this format is, it's clever and it delves into the human psyche. There's real basic human emotions that you can't help but relate to. So whether that's trust, lying, deception, we all know treacherous people out there. And this show shows both the best and the worst of that. It shows people getting creative and it also shows people being investigative. Mm. Number two, I think it's the presenter. Well, the thing is, I say the presenter, Claudia Winkleman, this is a format a bit like Love Island, but in its own way that has gone global. So we have Alan Cumming presenting the US version of the show, which is also quite popular when it's streamed in this country. And we also have Amanda Land and Derry Girls actress Siobhan McSweeney presenting the Irish version. But what the presenter does in The Traitor, so to speak, is to show a slightly different side of themselves. We see the presenter being almost abrasive of the contestants, a little bit dismissive of the contestants. They're not afraid to tell the contestants off, not be so much abusive of when they get things wrong, but let it be very widely known on screen in a very pointed manner. And then when it comes to the traitors, the presenter is not afraid to get a little bit sneaky. We see Claudia being a little bit cheeky, a little bit sneaky with the traitors. And then the third kind of format or the factor of why the show is popular, I think, is the casting. What the producers actually do is they're not afraid to lean in to a little bit of campness. And we've seen various personalities like Linda Rand become a fan favorite online, become a viral sensation for the camp elements. We had Fiona this season as the secret traitor again, this lovely Welsh granny figure from Wales.
She was great value.
She was brilliant. And Claudia Winkleman summed it up very well when she got banished, saying, "Fiona, can we all just say, what a woman?"
Absolutely.
And then, of course, in series two, we had the bombshell TV moment that was nominated for a BAFTA with Diane going, "Paul, he can't be my son, but yep. Ross is."
Yep.
So, you know, what we have here is,
it's
we have a really interesting format that kind of leans into murder mystery elements of Cluedo that delves into the human psyche. We've got a brilliant, charismatic presenter showing a real unique side of themselves that we don't really see on television. Yep. And then we've got genius, brilliant casting full of camp personalities who are not afraid to go there to create viral television moments. And then also, most importantly, they're not necessarily there to become famous. They're doing it
to win
a life-changing...
And they are such ordinary, normal people who come across as such. It's not like Love Island where you've got these sort of glamour models and these, you know, these sort of these influencers and so on. They are just clearly, they're normal people, they're grannies, they're mums and dads, they're students and so on. And they come across like that. And I think that makes it so much more authentic somehow, Josh, doesn't it? Has it got longevity, though, do you think? Because the concept's so good, but every series I've sort of already sort of, at the start of the series, I think, can this one be as good as the last? And it is, this one has been. But how long can it go on? How long can they sustain it, do you think?
Well, that depends. What I think The Traitors has slowly become over television, I think series two showed the potential and then series three, it kind of exploded.
Yeah.
And then the celebrity Traitors really exploded. It showed that actually people do have an appetite for event television. They want a program where they can sit in front of the television and watch a program with their families. And Traitors is just that. And back to the point that I was saying earlier, you've got people that are cast that actually are fans of the show and that want to play the game. And for example, the celebrity Traitors, I think, was a little bit of a risk to be shown because There are so many celebrity shows, you know, we've seen the slow decline of Strictly Come Dancing, Dancing on Ice taken off air. But with The Traitors, you had real, I don't want to say highbrow stars, but you had
genuine celebrities. Genuine you know, celebrities. Stephen Fry, and I can't remember who else was on.
Tom Daly.
Because it's such a popular show, actual celebrities want to do it in a way they might not other reality TV.
Because they were actual fans of the show and they wanted to play the game and they were fans of the game. What we have been seeing, because if you, I want to cast your mind back to the 2010s with the decline of the X Factor, because you had these huge format changes on the X Factor sweeping twists left and right. But what you have in The Traitors is what they're doing is they're being very clever because they're keeping the core at the game at the center, but they're making subtle twists bit by bit. And these twists aren't the same in the series, the same series in and series out. So that unpredictable. So for example, in series three, we had the seer where one contestant had the power to then meet a traitor face to face. Then the seer had to convince the rest of the group that they were telling the truth. Yes. And then the traitor had to basically say, oh, the seer's lying because they're the traitor. This year, what was very interesting in Fiona, we had the secret traitor, and not only did it mix it up, it actually brought a new element to the game because what it allowed us as the viewer to do, because of course we didn't know who the secret traitor was. So there was an element of us playing along with the rest of the faithful, trying to guess who this secret
traitor was. I appreciate they've got to keep it new and they've got to keep it sort of, you know, they've got to mix it up. But I didn't like the fact that the viewer didn't know who all the traitors were. I found that a bit frustrating myself, but what a series. Josh, thank you so much. Great to have you on talking us through why it's so successful. That's Josh from entertainment journalist and Traitors fan. I'd love to go on that show. There's one TV show I would love to go on. It would be The Traitors. That and Race Across the World. Thank you very much indeed, Josh. This comes in from Shirley. Ben, I think I'm one of the few that hasn't watched it. I'm so bored with reality TV. Shirley, you and me both. I was with you on that completely, but it's so much better than any other reality TV. Honestly, get involved. Check it out. More to come in a moment on your calls on university. Was it worth your time and money, or do you regret going and getting a degree? Ben Kentishere, this is LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Ball.
Is Andy Burnham the answer to Labour's problems? Has Donald Trump had a good Davos? And what can be done about the UK's food waste?
Clive Ball at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We are real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling and smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go in a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Visit your nearest centre. Stephen Eagle, Toyota Horsham. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Right, 10 to 1 is the time. Clive Ball with you in about 10 minutes' time. Let's talk for the last 10 minutes of my show this week about your experience of going to university, whether you think it was a waste of money for you or not. Where should we go next? Let's go down to South Shields, I should say, in London. Have a word with Farah.
Farah, morning.
Hi. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm looking forward to going home watching The Traitors.
Do you know what? I've never watched it.
Farah.
I know. I can't.
Honestly, check it out.
Well, I'm too busy listening
good.
To LBC and to well, you guys.
That's, that, as so excuses go, that's very, very good.
There you go. So I went to university. I did a BSc in psychology only because I was interested in it. I didn't have any particular job in mind. Just to put it into perspective, I graduated in 1997. So this was a very long time ago. And also, right. I got a maintenance grant. So if anybody doesn't know what that is, the council used to actually give you money to go to university.
Those were the days.
Yes, and you had student loans on top of that, and I did work. But the point I was just trying to make is that I've been in recruitment for the last 30 years, and I've really seen it change. Right now, I've got graduates from Oxbridge, from Russell Group universities, who've all got T1s first, masters, and they've done, you know, at distinction level, and they've done incredibly well, and they are struggling to get hired. So I think what we've had over the last sort of few decades is lots of people going to university for the love of learning, or possibly just putting off being a grown-up. I think I was probably one of those as well. And what's happened is that I would just strongly advise people to really think about university. It's so expensive now. I've got twin girls, and one of my daughters wants to be a doctor and go to medical school. So to a certain degree, I'm thinking, well, she's always going to, you know, she'll be able to find a job. The other one wanted to be a lawyer, and now sort of we had quite a heated, interesting conversation with her this afternoon. And she's thinking about something a bit more, what I would say, vocational, which is she wants to look at international development. So immediately as her mother and as a recruiter, I'm thinking, well, who's going to hire you? You know, what kind of job are you going to get? She's very committed to going into politics or some sort of human rights or NGOs, that kind of thing. And, you know, in my heart, I want her to study what she's really passionate about. And I would say if you love something, you'll always be successful at it if you're able to pursue it. But my concern is employability. So what I would say to people is really think about what you want to do. And my fear also is because one, university is becoming so expensive, it will just go back into this sort of elitist piece that we had decades ago. Mm. You know, those whose parents can afford to send them, they will be able to go. And then, the other thing is that those wonderful degrees that have come out, you know, I'm not talking about Harry Potter degrees or Taylor Swift degrees, but, you know, like looking at politics and all those sort of pieces that are really valuable, I think, because they're not directly associated with a profession that you can go into additional training and then find, you know, be able to find a job. I think they may start disappearing or the demand getting less. I mean, you know, kids who are going to Russell Group universities are struggling, and employers can pick whomever they like. And these kids have masters.
If you're applying for a job and a recruiter's looking at your CV, a degree just doesn't factor in at all far at the moment. They just won't care.
It does factor in, right. But there are so many really talented, bright, hardworking graduates out there who've secured excellent classifications because they've worked incredibly hard. But there's so many of them, And I work in tech, which is, you know, it's generally always a growing sector. I work with a lot of really interesting startups. You know, they look at really bright people. You mentioned Oxford graduates not being able to get jobs in astrophysics because there aren't that many. And I think before you decide on whether you're going down you're going to go straight into work or an apprenticeship or university, think about what kind of jobs are at the end of it. You know, you really need to, there's a lot of pressure on these kids, and they are kids at 18. And to make them sort of think about that, you know, it's quite a sobering thought. And that sort of lovely time that myself and my generation went through where we could just study whatever we liked because we didn't come out with $100,000 worth of...
It's about value for money, isn't it, Farah? And you know, I had a great time at university, and I think I left with about £20,000 of debt. And I do think it was worth that. Would it have been worth the £80,000 that I might have left with it was today? Quite possibly not.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, the one thing I will say is that I went to university, and when I went for my first interview for my first grown-up job, that job had actually also already been sort of offered, you know, earlier on, but the guy had actually forgotten that I was coming into the interview, so he was sort of a bit embarrassed. He interviewed me anyway.
Yeah.
But I ended up getting the job there because one of the girls that I was at university with in the year above walked past and saw me being interviewed and turned around to the guy who actually turned out to be, you know, my boss,
right,
and said, "You've got to hire her." And it's the same place I met my husband, it was worth going.
I got my first job as well through somebody I met at university. It might be wrong, but you get access to these networks and these contacts. I didn't go to private school, I went to comprehensive. So some people get that through their schools. I didn't, but I did get some of that by going to university. I wouldn't have had the first job that I had I not bumped into somebody at uni. Like you, Farah. Great call. Lovely to talk to you this morning. Check out the Traitors. Thank you very much indeed. Paul is a first-time caller in Walthamstow. Paul, you think it's worth the money or not?
Good early morning, Ben. Thank you for having me. First-time speaker, indeed. Look, I do not really believe it's worth the money, to be honest. Considering, obviously, the present interest rates and stuff. As you mentioned earlier, back in the day when it was a bit, like, when it was around 20K across the whole undergrad, maybe. But now we the interest rate and everything. I think I racked around 60 to 70K already.
Wow.
And
are you university now when you say already?
No. I graduated fairly recently in 2018.
Right.
So, yes. And I've only been managing to pay back about a year and a half ago. So I was working in retail, like, throughout the years, like six to seven years. And obviously it was a bit difficult to pass that threshold. And it goes back to, you know, I was part of one of those statistics, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said two-thirds of the country are not even paying the interest yet. And maybe
two-thirds of graduates aren't even paying off the interest, let alone the actual loan.
Yeah, precisely, and I was one of them. And luckily, until recently, I managed to obviously accelerate my professional career massively. So I don't really believe it's in terms of money, I think it's a little bit too much. But I wanted to discuss also as well, maybe a little bit controversially considering. So I want to obviously echo some of the points that were discussed already in terms of the benefits around the social aspect of it.
Mm.
I mean, I don't regret that at all. It's been absolutely amazing. I mean, it was one of the best 3 years of my life. And I've made quite a lot of friendships.
It's hard to put a price on that, isn't it? It's hard to put a value on having such an incredible life experience.
Exactly. And it's something that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life. So it's very hard to put like a financial label to it.
So sorry, Paul, just on balance then, you know, it hasn't necessarily helped you career-wise, but you had a great time. Are you glad you went or do you regret it?
I'm so glad I went, honestly.
Yeah,
even being like, I know I'm a little bit in debt, but I'm so glad just for the sheer experience alone.
You won't look back when you're older and think, my goodness, why did I spend those 3 years having such a great time?
Exactly.
It's hard to put a price on that. Paul, lovely to have you with us for the first time. Pick up the phone again very soon, please. I'm afraid I'm out of time for tonight, but thank you for wrapping up our conversation on universities. And sorry to Brian, who says we've ruined his Traitors watching experience with some spoilers. I'm really sorry, Brian. I'm going to go and watch the Traitors. I will be back with you Monday night at 10 p.m. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend in the meantime. And don't forget, you'll find today's show, along with all the shows from the week, on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts as well. You can get that for free. You can get it from your app store right now. Coming up at 4 this morning on LBC, Ian Payne will be here right now. Time for Clive Ball.
Thanks very much indeed. And coming up after the news at 1, allies of Keir Starmer said to be rushing to stop Andy Burnham. Excuse me, in his reported attempt to become Labour leader and thus Prime Minister. But with Keir Starmer polling so badly, could Labour be better off with a new leader? Is he the answer to Labour's problems? Also, major supermarkets are investigating allegations of excessive food waste at their stores after an activist drew attention to it online. The UK wastes a total of 10 million tonnes of food a year, and others are queuing up at food banks. What can we do to fix that? That and much more coming up after the news at 1 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, trilateral talks on ending the war in Ukraine will take place from today. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who spent an hour with Donald Trump yesterday, has confirmed Ukrainian, Russian and American officials will meet in the UAE. He's confirmed a peace plan is nearly ready. Jim Townsend, former Deputy Secretary of Defense for Europe at the White House, told LBC what we could see in the coming days.
It would be great if there was some type of agreement on what they might do about the land situation, the Donbas, how much of the Donbas should Ukraine retain. If they can come up with an approach that both Trump and Zelensky can agree on, and they can then present that to the Russians, that would be helpful to at least get the dialogue started.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump's provoked outrage among MPs and veterans after claiming NATO troops stayed away from the front line in Afghanistan. The US president made the comments in an interview in which he again said that the alliance wouldn't support America if asked. Critics pointed to the 457 British deaths in Afghanistan. It's understood the Home Secretary is planning to set out the biggest ever change to the structure of policing in England and Wales. The number of forces is expected to be radically reduced from the current 43. An announcement expected early next week. Baroness Natalie Bennett, Green Party peer and former leader of the Greens, told LBC it's taking forces further away from local communities.
We want to see local councils, local authorities having a voice. And what we've got is a government that's just centralising power and fewer hands. It's concentrating power even more in Westminster. The councils are being made to be agents of the state of Westminster. They're not being able to make decisions locally. And this is another potentially enormously centralising move.
Nearly half of school leaders say they needed